Hey, what's going on, guys? It's your boy JP. Just wanted to let you know that this week's episode of the Happy Hour went a little bit longer than I anticipated. Godfrey Manguiz and I broke down his game from Big Brother Canada 3, and we went well over 2 hours, which means we ran out of time to take your life advice questions. But don't worry, we're going to do another podcast in a couple of weeks to break all that down for you. I just wanted to give you a heads up right now. In order to make sure you don't miss that episode, make sure you subscribe to the Happy Hour on iTunes. Go to robbizawebsite.com/happyhour. That's Happy Hour with an R at the front. Or subscribe to Reality TV Wrap-Ups. That way you get my show, The Bachelor Wrap-Up, The Challenge Wrap-Up, The Top Chef Podcast, Taryn Armstrong's new podcast that's coming out soon covering American Ninja Warrior. Lots of great stuff. Go to robbizawebsite.com/wrap-ups. Ryan Elder, take it away.
It's the Reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar. Because you can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P.
Greetings, true believers, and welcome to another edition of the Reality TV Happy Hour. My name is Jordan Parhar, and this week I'm here to talk some Big Brother Canada with you on robbizawebsite.com. Today, I'm incredibly lucky to be joined by somebody who has a lot of nicknames. He's known as the Sleeping Giant. He's also known as the Godfather, the Lady Pleaser. Regardless of what you call him, though, you gotta love him. Very entertaining. He was a fan favorite from Big Brother Canada 3, the runner-up. It's Mr. Godfrey Manguiza, ladies and gentlemen. Godfrey, how you doing today?
I'm good. You forgot one of my other nicknames, man, the Messiah. I just got that one lately.
That's right, yeah. That's
Don't
right.
blame me, man. Hey, they gave it to me, man. They gave me the name.
Oh, man, we'll get into that nickname in a little bit, Godfrey, yeah. But I'm super happy to have you here today. I've been trying to figure out a time to sit down and talk, because I've had you on the podcast before, but we've never actually gotten into just talking about you. Because you're very entertaining. A lot of people want to hear from you about your game from Big Brother Canada 3, but I haven't been covering Big Brother Canada yet because it hadn't been that long.
You were part of it.
Yeah, and now Big Brother Canada 4 is starting up soon, so I figured now might be a good time to reflect, look back on our season of Big Brother Canada, and catch up with you a little bit and see what you're up to, because I know a lot of people are really excited to hear from you, and I'm really excited. Godfrey, just before we start today, to let people know, so we're going to talk a little bit about your game in Big Brother Canada 3. Maybe not get too deep into the strategy, more so the comedy and the stories and things that not everybody may have heard if they didn't watch the live feeds. Godfrey, before we start, how are you doing, man? Like, how's 2016 going? I know we talked a little bit offline, but for those, you know, for the people listening to this who want to know what you've been up to, I mean, you just graduated university, so you've got your psychology.
Yeah, about to graduate.
Okay, so you're about to graduate. So now what's next for the Godfather?
As far as what's going on right now, like, I'm just like living the life of a bachelor, or what you might call it. I'm just chilling, sleeping, man, eating. I'm not really doing that much, man. I'm just trying to put the pieces together, you know, just let the dust settle and then figure out what's the next step for me. You know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know, and I'm not trying to stress too much because I got a long way to go.
Yeah, well, you know what, Godfrey, you don't need to stress, because I think that you're a very talented guy. You know what's up. I've got a feeling you'll figure it out. Oh, man, I can't wait to see what you do end up doing, though, because it's going to be very fun. Big Brother in general, Godfrey, let's talk about before you even set foot in the Big Brother Canada 3 house. I know, based on talks we've had, and a lot of talks we had in the house, you and I had, and I don't know if a lot of people know this if they didn't watch the live feeds, but we talked a lot about your life, because you're a very interesting guy. I mean, you've been through...
absolutely, man.
Yeah, you've been through more things than, I mean, at the time, the average 22-year-old, now 23-year-old, has really been through. I mean, growing up, you know, in Zimbabwe and all this kind of stuff, so... Where did you first see Big Brother? Was this when you were still back in Zimbabwe, Godfrey?
Yeah, like the first season of Big Brother I actually ever watched in my life, before I ever knew what it was a South African season. Because they had a Big Brother South Africa, which I guess was a spinoff of the U.S. version. and the various versions they have around. And that's the first one I watched. Actually, not South Africa, Big Brother Africa. The person who won was from South Africa, though. And, like, that's the first one I ever watched. And the game, the whole concept at the time was really to the Big Brother I've come to know, like the North American one. It was like, you know, people get voted out and like the same thing, not really much audience involvement. And that's the first one I watched, and they just captivated me, man. I'm like, man, this game is crazy. So they are literally just voting each other out? Like, how do you do that, you know? And, like, I just love the game, man. You know, it had, like, everybody from the continent, man. This stuff was, like, serious. Because if you got voted out, you pretty much embarrassed your country. So the stakes were high, man. Like, our Big Brother, like, there was nothing on the line, man. Like, I don't think anyone from your hometown would have been like, man, screw JP. Can't believe he got voted out. But now imagine if the whole country is invested in your gameplay, you know? And then you, like, mess up. They're going to be like, hell, to hell with this guy. But, yeah, like, that's what I loved about it, man. And, like, I didn't even know they had one in America until I came to Canada. And then I was like, oh, so, like, you know, they got one here, too.
That's hilarious. Well, Godfrey, just to let you know, you had a little bit of a different experience on Big Brother Canada, but I actually did have a lot of people say that. They were like, oh, JP, you suck. You did a terrible job representing us. Get out of Cloverdale. We don't want you here anymore.
I guess I'm looking at it from a second place perspective. I should look at it from yours.
Yeah, I mean, Godfrey, you weren't too. I mean, you know, maybe if a few things went differently, you.
Yeah, it might have been different, man. Hey, I might have been kicked out of the city, man. You know.
Oh man. Okay, so you watched Big Brother South Africa, and to put a little context into you as well, because again, I don't think everybody realizes this. I mean, you're growing up in Zimbabwe. This is a country that is like there's a dictatorship in place. What's the dictator's name there again? Is it Mugabe?
Robert Mugabe.
Yeah. So, like, what was that like growing up in – and I know we've talked about that, but for the audience, like, what is it like growing up and having this guy in power? Because most people listening to this podcast have no idea what it's like, because most, you know, people in North America, we live in democracy. They never get a taste of anything like that.
No, absolutely, man. Like, in – like, I'll tell you, that's the amazing thing about the human spirit, man. Like, people will always find a way to make a good thing, even out of a bad situation. And even though things were, like, really tough back home, we still had fun, you know. We still watched TV. We still enjoyed the same music as other people would, even though the government tried, like, you know, really aggressively to limit any foreign media and all of that. I watched Big Brother. It wasn't on the local channels, man. Like, you had to stream that. Like, we had a little device. They actually called this, because the internet was not really that popular at the time, you know, not like you had to be rich to have an internet. But we had like a little device, kind of like a cable. So that thing would pick up signals from American channels and all that stuff. And you probably buy that for, I think the equivalent, like counting inflation and all of that, would be around like $80. That's how much it costs you. Like, you know, like if we were going to say Canadian dollars.
Right.
And you'd be able to watch, like, all the shows, man. Cartoon Network. You probably watched that as a kid, right?
I did.
So I was watching, like, the same shows, man. And that thing was obviously illegal because we were not allowed to watch other stuff that's happening because, like, that's the thing about a dictatorship. If people start watching them, like, man, people are turning up in Canada, man. Why am I still in this country? So, you know, you can understand why they didn't want us to see that. But nevertheless, we still were exposed to a lot of things, man.
That's
so in terms of, like, being in touch with the world, we felt really, like, you know, in touch with what was going on, you know. Like, things were tough, but we were not quite disconnected.
Right. Okay. And, you know, another story I remember you telling me in the house, too, and before – this was before you went to boarding school, right? Was when the military came to your house and they wanted to talk to you. Can you tell the audience about that story?
Please. I can't believe you even remember that, man. But,
Godfrey, I remember all those stories because honestly, I was talking to someone the other day. You know, people accuse me all the time of sucking up to people on my podcast, but I'm dead serious that you are probably the most interesting person I've ever met in my life. Because, because I don't know anybody who's gone through that, Godfrey. It's crazy. So talk about it. Like, what? So the military comes to your house and they come to your front door, and what do they say to your grandma?
So pretty much they just like knock on the door, man. And right there, my grandma, we all knew what time it was, man, because they were recruited. Like things were getting real, man. The opposition was gaining some, like, you know, some momentum. They were trying to overthrow the government. And the way of the government strategy to deal with that was to kind of recruit a lot of the young people and indoctrinate them. Then, you know, the best way to do that is make them join the military, you know, make them kind of have a more positive view of the government. And so, nevertheless, they came to my house, knocked on the door, and like I remember my grandma, she told me, she said, Gatry, you're going to have to wear this stuff, wear your sister's stuff, man. I'm like, you're never going to pull it off, grandma. She's like, you look like a freaking little girl, man. Like, at the time, I did. So I just like quickly, I put on my sister's dress, man, and everything. I didn't even need to put on a hat because like I literally looked like a girl, man, when I was a little kid. People would always mistake me for being a girl, yeah. Because like I guess like kind of my mannerisms and everything, I was always more for real though, man. Like I was always more like a little more feminine, yeah. Like I don't know what word would you use to like I was a young metrosexual.
Really?
I had a little bit of a masculine side, but if you saw me, like if you talked to me as a little kid, like I was kind of girly because I grew up with two sisters, you know, so I kind of copied them. I looked up to them and like, you know, and it's no surprise I kind of acted like them too, yeah. But anyway, they knock on the door and they're like, we know you got a son here. And how did they know? Because of the census, obviously. They're like, we know you got a son. We'd like to see him. It says here he is 13 years of age. So like, you know, by law, he's eligible to get like, you know, put in the military. He's got to serve on the reserve. And then my grandma's like, no, you guys got the wrong idea, man. Like, I actually have three girls. And they're like, you're lying. We got to see him. And they brought me up. They asked me for my name. And me being the idiot I am, I'm like, ah, my name's Godfrey. They're like, you're a girl. They're like, your name is Godfrey? And you're a girl? And I think because it was so ridiculous, they probably thought it has to be true. Like, no one's that dumb to say that they're a girl and use a guy's name. They're like, you know what? Maybe it's just some anomaly, man. And like, they actually bought it. They're like, oh, yeah, you got like a really pretty young lady there, you know, sorry, man. And then they actually, yeah, they left. And it's not only the military, bro, even a lot of people in my neighborhood, they thought I was a girl before, man. But like, once they got to know me, they're like, oh, yeah, Godfrey, you know, like, because you're wearing, like, you know, because I always used to wear my sister's clothes and stuff. And, like, Zimbabwe's, like, a really, really traditional kind of society, though. So if you, like, deviated from the norm like that, people automatically think that, okay, you just got to be a girl. Like, here in Canada, if you saw, like, a little boy wearing, like, or a little girl wearing pants, you're not going to automatically think, oh, that's a boy, you know. But if you live in a society where, like, things are really kind of, like, rigid, and like straightforward, anything like that is enough to fool anybody because they're like, you know what? It would be an abomination for him to do this. No grandma would do this. Yeah. Wow. So just like that, man, I survived, yeah. That's or else crazy. I would have been maybe the general if life had gone that other side.
I mean, we're laughing, but I mean, it's scary to think about that, Godfrey. I mean,
it is pretty scary, man.
Right? I mean,
I would not have had a choice to say no. I don't want to go. Like, it's like you gotta go, man. When they come in, they're not asking; they are telling you what's about to happen.
That's crazy. And then, okay, so after this, and we'll get into the Big Brother stuff after this. But after was this? Because you went to boarding school for several years. Was this?
Yeah, I went there at 13.
Okay, so after this incident, you go to boarding school, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I go to boarding school. Like I think it was 2005.
Okay.
Where I did my first year, and yeah, that was before. And then after I went to boarding school, that was kind of the norm, you know. Like there were boarding schools were pretty popular because they saved a lot of money. Like the parents don't have to really like pay for the kid at home, because once you're at boarding school, they provide you the food and everything.
Right. And it's crazy because you're at this boarding school and yeah. Again, I've heard lots of stories.
Oh,
about this.
Man. It changed my life, man.
And you know, Godfrey, have you seen the movie Slumdog Millionaire?
I did. I've
because
seen that movie.
I really feel like you and the main character are very similar because you had all of these crazy experiences. And without those experiences, I don't know, like, that has helped shape you into who you are, and it almost helped you win $100,000 because—
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think it definitely, I would have been a different person had I not gone to boarding school. And that's like one of the experiences that really kind of changed me, you know, because it teaches you a lot of things. A lot of people, a lot of kids, they grow up, they got, you got your buddies, you hang out with them after lunch, but then after that, you go back home. You don't have to live with your friends, you know? So when you're at boarding school, you are all kids. You're living, like, there are some adults, but for the most part, you're living in those hostels with only your peers. And so you got to get along with those people, because if you make enemies, trust me, you're going to have a bad high school experience. And in boarding school, it's like 6 years, man. We were, our semesters were 3 months in school, 1 month at home, 3 months in school, 1 month at home, 3 months in school. And just going there, like, the first day, man, that was my first time without me being with my family or my sister. And I was like, man, like, these guys who are my age, and in my boarding school, a lot of the guys were like 20, man. Like, I even said it, like, I, my first day, I asked my teacher, I'm like, you sure this guy's not grade, sir? Because I don't know, am I in the right class? They're like, yes, you're in the right class. So, like, some of the students were actually almost the same age as the teachers, man. So, like, just you picture it right now. Use your imagination. You're in boarding school. You're in the same class with a 19-year-old. Like, obviously, there's got to be some bullying involved. There's going to be, like, a lot of people, like, kind of, like, taking your lunch. And, yeah, so just that whole experience of having to navigate through that and having to kind of find yourself, you know, in that, like, that little society and not end up being, like, you know, a kid who's just going to, like, be crying for their mom, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And that, like, no, very few kids in this country. And I know there's this talk about how people in our generation, Godfrey, millennials, how terrible they yeah. are and all this stuff, because they never go through anything like that. Like, I can't say
that they never did that. You know,
yeah. Godfrey, like, if I had to go through that, I mean, I don't know what it would have been like. And one of the biggest things that we talked about, yeah. there's two things I want to touch upon. One, I remember you telling me the food situation there, you barely got any food, right?
Bro. Like, pretty much it started out the first month, the first year of boarding school, which over there we don't call it grades. It was form one instead of grade nine. So, like, after you're done, like, high school, grade eight, it's a whole new system now. You're now starting form one and form two, which would be the equivalent to grade 9, 10. And so the first year was not bad. You know, we got, like, three meals. It was a pretty strict diet, man, like, at the boarding school. They dictated what you ate. Like, you know, you couldn't say, hey, I want to eat this. Dude, when we showed up to school, like, the first day when you're coming to school, they were freaking security guards, armed security guards. Because, like, you'd come in with a trunk, and that would have all your, kind of your junk food that you're going to eat on the side. And we were not allowed any brand name stuff, because it was a missionary school. So they didn't want any kid to come in, you know. Like, you know, some kid comes in with some freaking no-name biscuits, and another kid's got some dark chocolate, Devonay or whatever. So it was really strict. They wanted us all to be the same. Everybody got the same haircut. The girls got haircuts. Everybody, you wore the same uniform. The food, they wanted you to have the same food. Even if your parents were more privileged, you all came with the same food. And the security guards would take out the food, man. If you had, like, some canned food, like, we knew how to smuggle this stuff in, but if they found it, man, they were throwing it on the side. And so, like, it was, like, really, it was kind of like prison. That's literally the only comparison I can give as Zimbabwean third world country boarding school. It's pretty, you think Big Brother's tough? Imagine being, you don't have to imagine. You lived it through Big Brother, man. You're the same thing. So imagine Big Brother, food we had in the house. You kind of, the meals, they might skip a couple. And they'll tell you, no, don't worry. We skip dinner. But tomorrow, we're going to give you guys a combined meal, dinner from last night and breakfast. And the kids will obviously be happy and stuff, you know. We wake up the next day, obviously that was a lie, just to get us not to, you know, rebel.
Wow. I mean, crazy. So you're getting no food at this in boarding school. And then, Godfrey, you were talking about navigating, like, the social hierarchy or whatever, if you will.
Oh, yeah, like, pretty much, yeah, the word you said, that's the right word, man. It's really a hierarchy, man. And the way you come in, And I always remember, like, my grandfather, he told me this, you know, like, before he passed away, because he passed away, like, right the month before I went to boarding school, you know. And he told me, he said, whenever you go in a new situation in life, you got to stand your ground, you know. You really got to, like, make an impression that first day. He always told me this. He said, the first day, you got to make the impression. Because whatever impression you make on that first day, people will be like, you know, that's who you are. So it's like, you know, and like, he gave me some unconventional advice. So he told me to pick a fight with the biggest guy. I'm not even lying, man. Because like, my grandpa was like a really macho guy, man. Right. He was like a really, like a man's man. And like, I was like, you know, like I told you, like, this little like feminine boy who really doesn't know anything. People think he's a freaking girl. That's the only reason he didn't go to the army. So like, you know, just that profile alone, like, you know, I'm going to have a hard time in boarding school. So like, he gave me that advice. And like, sure enough, the first day I did that, you know, I picked a fight with a guy who was bigger than me. Clearly he kicked my ass. But surprising enough, that earned me some respect because people were like, you know what? You can't really, you're not going to push this guy around. And I think that really helped me around, man. Because, like, in boarding school, there's a hierarchy, man. Because there's no parents and everything, somebody's got to be the top dog. And you read the book Lord of the Flies, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so pretty much, like, there's got to be, like, the top dog. Somebody's got to run it. And, like, if you can't insert your dominance early on, or at least show something to offer, you know, show that, you know, I'm smart, I can help you out with your homework, and, you know, you can give me some food. And there were a lot of cliques to in boarding school. And the cliques, they are a lot more different than you would have in a normal high school, because now you're living with the clique, man. And, like, you're literally sharing the same bed, everything. And, like, if you are hated by, like, a certain group of people, like, that can definitely affect your life, man. You're in boarding school. It's the little things, man, like things like sharing soap. Like, if you want soap from somebody else, things like bargaining, like buttering things, you know. Like, you want to sell, you want to get biscuits from another guy, you want to trade meals. So it was really kind of, it was kind of like Big Brother, man. Like, when we were living in there, like, you had to, early on, there were alliances, man. The only difference is people didn't go home. But, like, you had to get around, man, because this was literally, this was your whole, that was your family when you were living there. And you had to see them after you took the month off to go see your family. You had to come back, and you had to live with those guys. We grew together. We got to know each other. We shared, like, life experiences, you know. And, like, when you were feeling down and out and missing home, those are the only guys you kind of had to talk to, you know, to calm you down. Yeah. So it was a really good learning experience for me. Because, like, coming into the real world, I was much better with people because I had learned to live in a place. And, like, all these kids are boarding school. They're not coming from the same city. You know? People are from other provinces, man. And, like, it really opened up my world. I was like, man, some of these kids, they speak differently from me, you know? Like, their lingo is not the same as the one I had in my city. And I was like, and this kid, his values are kind of different. Like, you know, these guys kind of support the ruling party, the dictatorship. Where I'm from, we hate it. But some people are actually thinking it's not a dictatorship, you know? So it just showed me that, like, a lot of people had different outlooks on life. They had, like, you know, they thought a different way. And, like, if I had stayed in my own city, I probably would have been so close-minded. But going to boarding school, it taught me how to live with those different people and still respect their opinions while still kind of trying to teach them about your own, you know, and do it in a respectful way. And not, because some people, they didn't know how to do it, man. And those are the kids who had it bad, man. Those are the kids who got launched. Yeah, man.
And God, for that, I was waiting to ask you about that.
Yeah.
For the uninitiated, can you please explain what does getting launched mean, Godfrey?
It gives me no pleasure to explain this to you guys, but literally, it's the most disgusting thing that could ever happen to you. Like, it should be illegal, man, like, to be honest. Like, literally getting launched, man. Like, I'll tell you guys. Here was the code. Like, not anybody got launched. You didn't get launched for, like, silly things. You had to literally break the norm. Do something really unconventional, you know, really, really break the rules, break the bro code to get launched. So something like dating somebody's girl, stealing something, like, that was a big no-no. Because we're living together, you know, we got to trust each other. And if you're like robbing my stuff whilst I go take a shower, like, that's not a really good roommate. So stuff like that, man, people who wet the bed and tried to like switch mats, people did that. That was caused to get launched. Now getting launched, this is what would happen. Before the first day of school, just as soon as we get inside the boarding school, everybody would grab a bucket. And there would be like the special mixer. We call this guy the Mugada. That means like that's like the mixing dude. Okay. And this guy, like I don't even know why on earth somebody would volunteer to do this. But anyway, this guy, we'd give him the bucket and people, everybody, well, not everybody, like all these people who are messed up in the head would take a piss in the bucket. Some people would take a dump, man, or whatever. And then the mixer, this guy would mix all that stuff, you know, mix it all. And then they dig a hole and they put that bucket inside the hole and then cover it. So for the next 2 months, all that stuff is festering, man. As if it's not bad enough, it's got bacteria growing, man. It was not lethal, but still pretty disgusting, man. You got all nasty things growing. And then we'd wait for the end of the school year when everybody's about to go back home to their families. And then we had a blacklist, too, where we'd write the names of the guys who are kind of not following the rules, man. The guys who are not doing the right thing. The guys who are not taking showers. The guys who are just like, you know, just being a douchebag. And those guys, literally, by the end of the year, they usually knew who they were. So, like, normally they would not sleep that night here. But the guys who were foolish enough to do that, that mixer, the Magura guy, or this guy would go there, grab the bucket, man. And then whilst you're in the middle of your sleep, man, you're enjoying that good REM sleep, man. You're dreaming or whatever. And then just like toss that bucket over your head, man. Imagine being waken up to that. And the worst part wasn't the getting launched. Because like when you get launched, you can easily run to the shower, wipe that stuff off. But now your bed, your mattress, all of that, man. And yeah, it was just a nasty thing, man. It was a nasty thing, man.
And Godfrey, you
which, said, by the way, let me, for the record, I do not condone this, man. I'm just saying, you know, what it was. I don't want people saying, man, Godfrey, I can't believe you were launching people. I got launched myself.
Yeah, Godfrey, why did you get launched again? Because I forget what happened. Was it you liked some girl or something?
No, not even that. Because my sister... There was a dude who was into my sister, you know. Like, he's like, man, you know, like, he'd always come up to me, you know, and he'd be like, oh, Godfrey, you know, your sister's banging, man. Like, I really want to, you know, I want to work something out, if you know what I mean. And so, like, me, obviously, I'd tell him, I'm like, oh, man, you know what? Actually, Ella was talking a lot about you. She said you're hot. And I'd be lying. I'd be only saying that to get protection because my sister was older than me. She was, like, a couple grades older than me. So, you know, I'd say that to get, like, favor from the guys. So I figured if I led them on and made them believe that my sister was actually interested in them, they'd give me food, which they did as a reward because I was giving them intel. I was saying, hey, man, she told me, she even gave me a list of the guys she thinks are the hottest, and you are at the top, bro. But you see, if you can give me a couple more Snickers, I could tell you what she really told me last night. So, you know, I was doing that kind of scheme. That was my money scheme for a long time, man, and I profited quite a lot, man, from doing this until word got out because I think one of my sisters, like, actually embarrassed the guy, man. Like, she, like, literally told him, hey, I ain't into you, you know, you're, like, probably the ugliest of the entire school system. And, like, you know, so this guy has to go through this after I've been telling him for a full year that, hey, you got it, man, you got it. That girl's all into you. And so he has to find out the hard way that, you know what, she doesn't even like him. And so you can imagine he was pretty upset, man. And yeah, I kind of had that one coming to me, man. It still wasn't a good experience, man. I think it was kind of an overreaction, like a warning would have been good. You know, I offered him to give him back his stuff, but he told me, he's like, no, we all good. You know, don't worry, man. Just have a good night's sleep tonight, man. And yeah. That was my launch experience, man.
Oh my gosh. I mean, but again, I mean, it's crazy. Like, you guys are kids and you have to deal with this kind of stuff. It's nuts. Oh, but,
it's a wild life, man. It's a wild life. And it was fun, man. Like, I'm I know I've said a lot about the bad stuff, but it was really a good time, man. You know, like, because you had your boys, you were living with these guys, and we went on a bunch of adventures, man. You know, like, we're literally living in the middle of a farm, man, in a missionary school in the middle of nowhere. And, like, so you can imagine things are going to go down, man. You know, I told you about the time we tried to kill a cow.
Yes. Because you guys were so hungry, right? And one guy said...
It was, man. Like, we just had enough of it because the school kept, like, messing us over, man. Like, every time, it got so bad to a time where we were only eating one meal a day, man. Like, literally.
Oh, wow.
And that one meal was, like, dinner. Because they were saying that, oh, you know, you guys got, like, your food in the trunk. But not everybody had it because people had finished their food, you know. But, like, because times were so bad and the school literally didn't have any money to, like, actually buy the food. So, like, you know, they'll try to, like, bribe us by throwing, like, a huge party, kind of like, you know, or giving us a movie night just so that we wouldn't, like, because obviously it would look bad for the school if word broke out that, like, you know, we're only eating once a month. So as a way to, like, kind of bribe us, they'll bring a movie or they'll bring, like, a local celebrity to come just meet the kids, stuff like that, you know. But, like, one time it got so bad that, like, one guy, man, this guy's name was Rodwell. And he was an idiot, man. I don't know why we even listened to him. He tells us, he's like, guys, he's like, we should kill a cow. And we're like, kill a cow? Are you serious? And, like, this is Zimbabwe, man. A cow is worth quite a lot of money. So if you, first of all, the cow you're going to kill most likely belongs to somebody. And they're not going to be too happy that you killed their cow. And, like, we actually almost went through with that, man, until we went over the logistics. And we're like, you know what? This makes no sense. Because where are we going to keep the meat once we kill the cow? We have no fridge and all of that. But like, we actually almost tried it, man. You're like, guys that actually were making makeshift weapons. And like, we were just so dumb at the time, man. We're like, this stuff probably couldn't even take down a cow. You know? We would have just gotten kicked. And yeah, it would have ended badly.
I don't know how to transition from that, but let's... Let's move on to you moved to Canada. You're 16?
Yeah, 16.
16, okay. And then you're here. You come here. Your dad was living in the States, right? And then he moved.
Yeah, he was living in the States.
And then he moved to Canada. And he moves you and your sisters. And then, but your grandma goes to England, right?
Yeah, she goes to England.
And that was a big reason why you wanted to win the money was to bring her to Canada, which ultimately you did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's awesome that happened. That's really cool. Is your grandma like staying at your house now, or what's the situation with that?
Well, right now she came mostly to visit. She came for about 3 months, but she went back there and she's going to be coming again for my graduation. And then we're figuring out like a sponsorship to get her to actually live here, you know?
Okay, that's awesome, man. Okay, sweet. So 16 years old, you come to Canada, completely different. And fast forward a couple of years. When did you first see Big Brother US? Because I imagine you probably saw that before you saw Big Brother Canada.
Oh, yeah. The first time I actually saw Big Brother US was, I can't quite remember the year it was, but the season it was the one that Dan won.
Big Brother 10, okay.
Yeah, Big Brother 10. That was the first one I ever watched. I didn't watch the entire season throughout, so I actually missed the part that when Dan ended up winning. But I did watch like the first couple of episodes from there. I think I watched up to the 8th, 9th eviction. And then, from then on, I was like pretty much hooked, man. You know, the season after that. The one I really did watch, though, was the second one after that, the one with Rachel, her first appearance on it.
Big Brother 12.
Yeah, Big Brother 12.
Okay. So you see these U.S. seasons of Big Brother, and I watched your interview with Spencer McRae on the Block. Definitely go check that out, guys, if you haven't listened to that already, because Godfrey gives great insight on his game. But you said there that you saw a commercial for – you're thinking during Big Brother Canada 2, you saw it, and you just – was it a commercial that made you want to apply, or you just were like, I can win – I want to win $100,000? What exactly was it?
Well, for like Big Brother Canada. In fact, like I had always wanted, like from watching the U.S. one, like, you know, naturally you'd be like, man, I wonder what it will be like if I actually go inside the house. But at the time, I didn't really have that much any ambitions to audition for it or anything like that. But after I saw it come to Canada and they had the first season that happened, you know, the one that Jillian won, I actually didn't think too much about auditioning for it because I was still kind of just like watching Big Brother like here and there. And, you know, I was more of a Survivor guy. And like, you know, so I watched like both shows. And but really when I saw the first Canadian season and I saw like how good it was, and I'm like, man, you know, these guys are not just like, you know, Americans. These guys are like close to home, man. And Gary, a guy who was from Toronto, coming in second, that really kind of motivated me to be like, you know what? Maybe I should go on this thing. You know, it actually might not be that bad. And at the same time, I was still kind of nervous and scared because I didn't quite think I could do it. But then after watching a couple more seasons of the U.S. one, and then now this is about the time where I'm kind of calling myself a Big Brother connoisseur. You know, I'm kind of figuring out. I now know the strategies, the terms, like, you know, floater, backstab, blindside, you know, splitting the vote, you know. So, like, kind of as any other thing in life, you know, like if you're playing a game of chess, on the first few games you play, you're not going to say, you know what, I'm going to play the grandmaster in Russia and see if I can beat him. No, you'd be stupid to do that, you know. So, like, you know, if you're playing chess for the first couple games, you know, you're going to wait, you're going to challenge a human opponent and, you know, not play on your iPhone. And then when you get better, then you might be like, you know what, I might be competitive. So, like, that was kind of like me with Big Brother, you know. The more I watched it and the more I kind of started to understand it, not only from a fan perspective, but from actually really dissecting the game, like, you know, really looking at everything it takes to win that. And this is about the time where I was now in university, too, because I got in 2011, started my first year of psychology. And after 2 years into it, the stuff I was watching on Big Brother was kind of related to the stuff I was learning in class. And I'm like, these things are so connected, you know, it's like literally, it's the same thing, you know, like I'm pretty much being taught to play this game. And that's when I watched the second season again. And I kind of, you know, I had a couple of my picks and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to see if I can pick the winner in it. And that one I was way off, though. Who? I remember the person I actually...
Who'd you pick, Godfrey? Who'd you pick?
Oh, man. The person I actually picked is the first person who went home. Yeah.
Poor Nick, Godfrey.
Poor Nick. But I actually, here's a funny thing. I actually had John in my top three pick.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't a serious pick, though, yo. Like, I just picked him, like, you know what? I'm like, I think he might be able to do it. But I had, like, all my money on Anik. I thought for sure she would have won the season, you know? John, I was kind of up there, you know? But, yeah, like, when I watched that one, that really got me into wanting to play. And then what I did, because I hadn't watched the previous seasons of Big Brother, I started watching it at season 10. So I started studying the game again, seeing how it is. And then what I started doing is I'd watch the seasons backwards.
Oh, why'd you do it backwards? Like, what made you think about that?
Like, just to see, like, I just wanted to see if it would change kind of like, you know, the feel of it. Just kind of to see where things started to unravel, where somebody's game kind of fell apart. And I found it going backwards as a standard of going forward, you know, it really kind of showed you, oh, this is what led to this. And keep in mind, these are seasons I hadn't watched.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know. Like, I only knew because I watched it backwards. I knew who won, but I didn't know who came in last or who came in third. And, like, believe it or not, watching it in that sequence, like, I was able to understand the game a lot more because I'd see the stuff the guy said in the final speech. And then I'd see it happen. I'd be like, no. Why are you doing this in this episode? It's going to screw you over in the first one, you know? And,
wow,
like, trust me, man, like, it's actually something I learned from taking developmental psychology, that, like, if you're watching things from backwards, because think about it, when you're watching the show backwards, it's literally like you're seeing into the future. You already know who was won, so now you're just evaluating where did the person mess up, as opposed to if you're watching something chronologically, going to, like, who's going to end up winning it. So a good example would be if you're watching a football game, and you already know who won the game. When you watch it, you are much able to see the mistakes that people are making because you're going to be more conscious of it. You're going to know that who already won, you know? I don't know if you, like, get what I mean
yeah,
here.
Yeah, no, I think this is, like, fascinating stuff, Godfrey. That's a, like,
yeah, because usually if you're – exactly, because if you watch a game, and you're starting from like the start of the game, you're not noticing a lot of things. It's kind of like when you've watched a movie three times and you start noticing things, you're like, man, I didn't even know this part. Or if you're watching the thriller and you've watched it five times and you're like, man, I totally missed this part of the plot. So it was kind of like that for me, you know, and I was just watching it as practice. And then I actually got so good that I was able to predict things that happened prior. I was able to be like, you know what? I bet this guy screwed him over on the veto and didn't use it and used it on that one. And I was able to predict the events that went throughout the first. And I could even predict who went home before who by watching it backwards, you know. And it just gave me like a better insight, you know, to watching the game. And come to my audition now, me actually wanting to go on an audition for the show. Like, it was, this was pretty much like end of 2014.
Right.
And Big Brother season 3 is coming. I hadn't really like seen it that much, like on the TV or anything. And my friend tells me, he's like, man, Godfrey, you know, like we got to do it. You know, let's go audition. And I was kind of like, nah. But then the person who actually made me end up auditioning for it was like my sister. And she kept telling me, she's like, oh, you're going to go home first. You can't even do that. It's not the same, man. You know, it's probably scripted. And like right there, I was like, you know what? Okay, I'm going to go there and I'm going to show you that I can win the game, you know? Because like I'd always been like talking a big game at home going like, hey, I know Big Brother, you know? And she's like, man, you don't know anything. You're just watching the show. Like, you know, that stuff doesn't mean anything. And like I was so full of it at that time that I think it's like that false sense of confidence that actually made me go and audition for it, Matt.
Crazy, man. That's awesome though, man. Like it's so cool I love the developmental psychology thing, and then your sister egging you on, and that's why you go. So you audition for the show, and you get a call back. Was there anything in particular you thought you did well that made you stand out? Did you feel good about your auditions every time you met with casting?
Well, here's the thing. Like for me, I had never like auditioned for a reality show. Like I had done one game show before, but the audition process was kind of a little different, you know? But like I had absolutely no clue what to expect. Cause I can't even call myself a super fan. Because I find it like super fans are more so people who know about the players. They know the statistics and all of that. I'd say I was kind of like an apprentice. I was kind of watching it. I was trying to learn about it, you know. I wasn't so interested in the people's names or who did what. Like, I couldn't be able to tell you what happened on what date. So I wasn't a super fan in that sense. But I was just kind of somebody really interested in it, you know. Right. Like, not really interested in playing it, but just, like, knowing how the game works, as anyone would be with something, a show they like to watch, you know? So, like, coming into my first audition, I had no idea what to say, man. Because, like, I had searched online. I actually searched up. I'm like, how to audition or the things to say in a Big Brother audition. And the first thing that came up was people saying, don't go online to find that because the advice you're going to get is totally wrong. And these were people who didn't make the show. So I knew they were quite credible in that claim if they didn't even get on. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't watch this, you know, because it's going to give me like a sort of idea of what to say. And I don't want to seem rehearsed. I don't want to, like, God forbid I get the wrong advice. I'm like, you know, half the people giving the advice have not even been on the show. So why am I listening to these guys? So I just went there and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see how it is because I did not think I was going to get on for sure. Like, I thought I could win the game. I thought I knew how to play the game. But as far as the audition process went, I was not quite sure how to get myself on. So when I went, I was like, I'm just going to do it as a trial and error, you know? So I had like really low expectations, and like going into the casting, it was quite different from what I expected. You know, like I thought it was going to be really tough, like a job interview, but they asked us some pretty basic, simple questions. Like, you know, what do you do for a living? What is your name? Like, if you can't answer those questions, then man, you should not be on reality TV. And so I was pretty surprised because I didn't know how you'd stand out with such a line of questioning. But I guess kudos to the casting director because they kind of know what they're looking for, you know. But it was just like, it was weird my first time because it was not the questions I had in mind, you know. I thought they were going to ask me more about strategy. But, like, you know, they just asked pretty basic questions, you know, like non-trick questions, like, you know, the process, like, you know, pretty easy stuff.
For sure.
And that's what surprised me, how casual it was.
Yeah, it is really interesting, and I think for someone like you, I think a lot of, like, Robin Cass's advice for people is just be yourself. I think you're the perfect example of that, because you're somebody who, again, it was very interesting. You don't need to do anything to really stand out, and I'm sure that they saw that right away, right? Okay, so Godfrey, you're going further in the casting process. Things are going really good. You probably have an idea in the back of your mind that you're going to be going on the show. You've got a chance, at least. So what did you do in the weeks leading up to the show to prepare? Because I know you tweeted recently that you were telling people for Big Brother Canada 4 to read The Art of War. Was there any other books or things you did in particular to get ready?
Well, absolutely, man. Like the Art of War is actually a really great book, like actually used by a lot of prominent war generals and strategists. And it teaches you a lot about like life. And more so about, like, you know, winning. It teaches you more about, like, deception. And it tells you, according to the Art of War, all wars are won by deception. So it gives simple tips, like, you know, when you're close, appear to be farther. When you're farther, appear to be close, you know. And it always tells you, you can never show your cards. You always gotta, like, you know, if you're smart, you play dumb. If you're dumb, you play smart. You know, it's all about doing the opposite, you know, like, kind of throwing people off. So that book really helped me a lot, you know, because, like, I'm really into gaming and a lot of that. Not like video games, but more so I'm a board game type of guy, you know. Like, I play, like, Monopoly, chess. I was, like, pretty good at chess, like, back in my high school. Like, I think I could have gone, like, even farther if I really committed to it. So I've always been, like, a guy who's really into, like, strategic games, you know. And so I read those books, and they did give a lot of good ideas, you know. Like, it's not the be-all and all be-all, you know. Like, you're not going to read the book and automatically know everything that's going on, you know. It's all about, like, applying the stuff you learned. And I read that, and I even read Donald Trump's book, The Art of the Deal, you know, which, yeah. Donald Trump is not paying me to say this, guys. Yeah, trust me. It gives me no pleasure to say this, but I read it, and hey, it gave some good advice, man. If you're like, if you've got a small loan of $1 million, then yeah, it might help you out a little bit. But I read like a lot of books, man. Yeah, I read that. I read a lot of my psychology books. But the really real preparation that I did, you know, aside from like Art of War, Art of the Deal, like those books are just kind of like for fun. Like I said, they're not going to give you everything you need to know, you know, but they are good kind of to have in your back pocket, because these are like real strategies that have been used by people successfully. And most of my preparation was really on watching all of the seasons, especially the American and the Canadian ones, because those are all I had to go by. I couldn't really find much of the Canadian seasons online, so I watched the American one, season one to the last season. And like, I really just started to look at the little nuances and the little things in the game, you know, things that, like, you know, don't really stand out, but stuff like on the first night, who was standing next to who before they went in the house? And did that affect the outcome of the game in any way? Like, you know, just like little things like that. Like, you know, two people from different provinces or from, in case of the U.S., from different states, were they more likely to align or were they more likely to go against each other? So now I was kind of getting into the super fan type of thing, which, like, you would probably know a lot about. And, you know, I was really trying to get into the statistics and see that, you know, who's more likely to win when two people are on the block, you know. Is a physical threat more likely to go home than a strategic threat? And is a strategic threat more likely to advance to a jury than somebody who is more of a social game? So I was trying to get into those statistics, you know, and really know, because I thought it would help me a lot in the event that I won an HOH. Like, you know, I'd have to know who's more likely to go home if I nominate them. And, like, you know, like, you know, like, you can't really argue with the statistics, man. You know, like, they offer great insight into, like, how things might work or might not work. So that's what I did, you know. I tried to watch all the seasons, and not as a casual fan, just watching, somebody got voted out. Like, I was really trying to pick up the little things and taking notes and writing it down. And it was quite a tedious task, man. But, like, I think it did. It helped me quite a lot. It helped me quite a lot in formulating the ideal strategy for me to go in. Because believe it or not, my strategy was actually I wanted to go into the game and play a really physical game. I wanted to win a lot of comps earlier on because I thought that that might get me people to want to align with me if I'm a huge physical threat, you know, because they think that I'd help them out with their game. But after watching all of the seasons, I came to the realization that people who have played that type of game, statistically speaking, have not won or even made Final Two that often. And so I really formulated and came to the conclusion that, you know what, I'm going to have to play a really subtle game behind the scenes, like just chill, don't even do anything. You know, I figured that that was the smartest thing to do, at least for me to make it past jury, you know. Because like I think that's what anyone who goes into the Big Brother house is thinking. They want to make it past the first few weeks. Like, you know, a lot of people are not even thinking about winning the game. Like, I know me, for one, I was thinking, man, I got to make it past the first night, the first couple of weeks. Like, you know, I didn't really have an end game. It was just, if I can make it through that, then I can reevaluate when I'm in. So that really helped me prepare a lot, you know. So I suggest people read The Art of War. It's a really, really good, realistic book. Ancient book, and it's a quick read too, like probably 30 minutes. And I'd say also watch the seasons and don't just watch it not writing anything down. Like really watch it and see who's more likely to win, which type of people have worked together more often, stuff like that.
Interesting stuff. Was there anyone's game, Godfrey, that you wanted to try and mold your own after? Because I know you're very unique. But were there any, who was somebody that you admired that you wanted to try to bring elements of their game to your own?
The person I really admired their game in terms of like the game I thought was more likely to get me to win was really like, you know, obviously Dr. Will. Like just the way he played, I thought was pretty flawless. Like he led everyone to believe that he was just a goof, really weak. Doesn't know how to do anything, and he was able to go really far with him. And I also like Dan, not on his second time around, but on his first season, you know, I think he really played a really good game. The same as Derek, you know, like all of these guys. Like, I know it's a cliche, but hey, man, like these guys are legends. They won the game. So, like, you know, if you're going to follow somebody who actually came first. So I really wanted to mold them after that, you know. And at the same time, I was even looking at people who didn't win, who came in second, because I was like, at least they still made it far. And I was trying to mold my game after those people as well. And I really liked Jerry's game.
Wait, Jerry from Big Brother 10?
Absolute old man Jerry, man. I really liked, yeah, I enjoyed his game quite a lot, man.
Why did you like Jerry's game? Do you think Dan is Judas, Godfrey?
I just found it, like, you know, like, because he was so straight up, like, really, like, not smooth at all. Like, just straight up saying whatever he wants to say. And people were still keeping him around, man. And I'm like, this guy's crazy, man. You can't trust this guy. Like, Dan is Judas. But, man, like, freaking Jerry is not that far apart from him, man. Like, they're kind of cut from the same cloth. I just like the way he was able to make it to the end and being such an old guy, man. Not something you see quite often. And I also really liked Marvin's game. I think his game was really impressive. I like the way he adapted throughout the season.
Yeah.
He came in really strong. And after that, he kind of learned to take a back seat, let the four macho boys, you know, the frat boys, like who are the guys in there? Drew and the
Drew,
let them kind of call the shots, you know?
Scott, yep.
Yeah. That season had quite a lot of characters, man. Cowboy, I liked his game as well. But Marvin really, it impressed me, you know, his game.
Oh, wow. All right. Derek, Marvin Latimer shout out on the podcast. I don't think that's ever happened on my show before, Godfrey. So there you go. You're the first one to bring up Marvin. Okay. So you've done all this preparation. You're good to go. You get the key. You're going into the house. Very exciting stuff. We both experienced it. You're backstage the first night. You're ready to go into the house. You're wearing your yellow polo. You've got your iPod in your ears, and it's blasting.
Yeah.
And I could hear your music. You're right. You see me. What do you think when you see?
I just see a bow tie.
Yeah. What do you? What did you think when you saw me standing backstage? You see me, Ashley, Zach. Yeah. I don't know if you could see Zach because you're kind of far
away. I couldn't see Zach that far. I could only see you, man. Yeah.
So what is what's going through your head? You see me because I'm curious to hear what your first initial thoughts were when you saw me, and then once we entered the house and I started calling you the Lord.
My first impression was, man, this kid is gonna be trouble. Just looking at the peripheral vision, I was like, this ain't looking good, man. And then when we were actually on stage and I take a better look, I'm like, oh my God, he got glasses and a bow tie. We're screwed. Like, I don't mean to swear, but we fucked up, man. Like, I knew. I was like, it's done. Another freaking, what's that kid's name? Ian?
Yep.
I'm like, great. He's definitely not going home before me because they're not going to vote that guy out. But then when I look to my left and I see Zach, I'm like, now we're talking. At least I got somebody to take the hits before I go. So that was kind of like the thought process in my head. Like, I was already sizing up the competition. And right away from, like, the people who were standing on that stage, I knew instantly. I'm like, Sarah, Britt, and you are my bigger competition early on. Because I just figured just by appearance alone, I thought you guys were going to go farther. But then when I looked at Zach, I was like, man, like, this guy, I don't think he's going to last. He's going to be the third one to go. Yeah. Which is funny because he ended up being him. We were like the only two guys left.
Right. Yeah. You guys were the last two guys.
And let me remind you, like, I didn't think my chances were that good either, man. Like, I came in feeling so confident. I'm like, I will win this game. My strategy is flawless. Like, you know, nothing can go wrong. But just that first night when I see the people who I'm going to the house with, like, I started to reconsider, you know. I'm like, man, can I really beat these guys? I haven't even talked to them. Like, you know, it just became more real. And I was like, dude, maybe you should tone it down a bit. You know, it's not going to be as easy as you think it is. But when I came into the house, you know, like, those first interactions, they were pretty fun, you know. Like, right away, I was like, you know, you seem like a pretty cool guy. You were, like, the more conversational people in the house at that time. Like, I think you were kind of, like, holding court, really talking. And because I didn't really get to talk much with Sarah or Brittany, but I did talk to you and Zach, and you guys were more conversational.
Yeah, no, I remember just seeing you backstage, and I also was very scared of you because you were this big guy had this, like, loud music you're listening to, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, and you were just, like, so serious, and I just thought, oh my gosh, this guy's here to play. But then when you came into that, like, Arissa says we can go in the house, and then we turned to go in, and then you just, like, pushed me out of the way to go in. I was like, okay, this guy's, like, this guy seems like, this is a fun guy, all right, because you were really excited, and we were talking, and it was just very – Very interesting. First impressions going around. Everyone says what they do, and we get to you, Godfrey, and you tell everyone that that you have a nonprofit organization called the Injured Raccoon Society. Now, was the logic here? Did this come from being a 13-year-old boy telling the Zimbabwe army that you were a girl named Godfrey? The idea that, okay, here's a lie that it's so crazy that people are gonna just believe it.
Hey, you're absolutely right, man. Like, when I really came up with that, I was like, hey, I'm coming into the game. I can't give too much away. I definitely can't say I'm a student because that kind of, like, you know, shows that I'm somewhat smart. Like, if I'm in university, like, I'm definitely not a dumbass. So I'm like, you know, maybe if I tell them that, like, you know, I run this charity, they might see me as, like, a really trustworthy guy who likes animals. It's just trying to help the world become a better place, you know? And I'm like, who's really going to – I'm like, nobody wants to be the guy that got rid of their animal charity, dude. So I was like, you know what? Maybe let me go with it and see if these guys buy it. I'm like, it's so ridiculous that they can't possibly think I'm lying. Like, who comes up with that? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And that – it totally worked, Godfrey, because for me, I was just like – I bought it because I thought, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. But based on all the other stories you were telling me – after that, I was just like, okay, like this kind
it's
of
not so crazy.
Yeah, not so crazy. And then what kind of made me doubt it a little bit was when you told me that you were selling raccoons illegally to Cambodia for $8,000 a piece
and shipping them through boxes. Oh, man.
For those of you guys listening, Godfrey and I, yeah, we'd work out and you would together and you would tell me these stories. And you told me that one day. And At first, I was like...
I'm like, they use them as exotic pets over
there. Yeah, that's what you told me.
They got a big market for raccoons, man.
Yeah, and you had that lie down so good. And I was just like, all right, I believe this guy. This sounds legit. It was so great. Okay, the first night happens, whatever. Everyone comes in. People get nominated. We all nominate people, whatever. There's the competition. Cindy wins. Peely and Rish are on the block. Afterwards, though, Godfrey... You were gaming like really, really hard that first night because I remember like you came up to me and approached me about being in an eight-man alliance. And I remember we were sleeping because we had no furniture. It was you, Greg, and Bruno. And originally it was going to be me. We were all sleeping in the kitchen. But then you asked me to be in the alliance. So I got scared that people would think that I was gaming too hard. So then I slept on the floor under the stairs. What was the logic behind going that route?
Well, coming in right away, like, I felt like the line had already been drawn in the sand, you know? Because, like I told you, man, like, first impressions are all it is. And, like, the first 5 minutes you're in there, like, people are already gravitated to the people they kind of have more in common with and the people they see themselves playing the game with. And I was like, man, I got to set something up at least to ensure my safety, because who knows, somebody might be going the next day. Like, and Arisa had already told us there was a nomination right away. So I'm like, geez, the way this game is moving, it's so fast paced. Like, I don't want to end up going home and be like, man, I didn't even set anything up. And unfortunately, I kind of went about it the wrong way, because I hadn't given myself enough time to really gauge people and see who can I tell what to and who can I not. So right away, I think I probably approached everybody in the house. Probably the only people I didn't talk to was Kev and Johnny and who else? Yeah, Kev and Johnny are probably the only people I really didn't come up to, you know, only because I didn't have enough time during the day, man. But if I did, I probably would have been in an alliance with them too. So I was just going to everybody, man. I'm like, man, I got to lock something down, even if it's temporary. So I literally, my ideal situation was to kind of build a boys thing with myself, Bruno, Greg, you, and Zach. And I was like, man, like us five, we could really control the vote. So I was like, if I can get that early on, I can at least buy myself a couple of weeks to figure stuff out. And yeah, you know, like I actually thought for those first couple of days, I was in a delusion, man. I'm like, man, things are working according to plan. Until after a while, Bruno pulled me aside and it's like, Godfrey, man, you're going too hard right now. He's like, everybody's been coming up to me saying, don't trust Godfrey. I was like, oh, I'm like, what? I'm like, they've been telling you that? Dude, what the hell, man? Yeah. And so right away, I think like Bruno telling me to kind of calm down and just let the game play itself out, you know, that kind of helped me out. And it, you know, got me going back to my strategy. I'm like, Godfrey, this is not what you came into the house saying you were going to do. Like, you know, just stick to your strategy. And maybe when you're on the block, then you can scramble. But at that time, I had no reason to scramble. But you know how stressful it is in the house. You're paranoid, man. Like, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know other people you're talking to. Are they really being real? So, yeah, you know, I was kind of going crazy. And it got the best of me for those 2 hours. But good thing I kind of calmed down and really went back to just, like, you know, not worrying too much. Like, you know, let the people on the block sweat. You know, I don't have to sweat.
No, I mean, that's interesting, but it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's really cool that you started really at the bottom, Godfrey, and you flipped slowly with time.
Yeah.
As the game progresses, you flipped it on its head to get to the top. And I think it's really, really cool how that all turned out. Probably, I think the biggest, Bruno was probably your closest ally throughout the game, at least for certain points.
Definitely.
Yeah, but very early on, Greg and you were very, people were considered you guys to be really tight, even though Greg didn't invite you to the chocolate.
Oh, yeah, and we were pretty tight with Greg.
You were pretty tight with Greg, but you knew Greg was, Greg wasn't going to last in the game.
I kind of knew that. Like, so, my relationship with Greg was kind of a weird one, you know, because, like, I knew right from the bat, I knew Greg was not telling me everything that was really happening. I knew he was holding a lot back because Greg is a bad actor, yo. I'll leave it at that. We're at the HOH competition, and this guy is literally screaming out. He's like, man, I hope Bobby doesn't win. I hope it's not Bobby. And it's like literally like, I'm like, dude, there's still 8 people in that the wall-to-wall competition. Why are you worried that Bobby might win? I'm like, does it really matter? He's like, I hope he doesn't win. And this guy was saying it for everybody to hear. And I'm like, man, this has got to be intentional. Like, you know, like, I know you know people can hear you. You're whispering too loud. And right away, I kind of figured he might actually have something with Bobby and was just trying to pull some reverse psychology on everybody sitting down. And I think everybody kind of knew this except for Greg. They're like, dude, all right, great. Bobby and Greg are working together. But yeah, like right there, just from him saying, oh, I hope it's not Bobby. And then at the end, when it's down to Cindy and Bobby, he's like, ah, oh, Bobby should have won. And then Bobby ends up winning. I'm like, dude, why are you celebrating? All the time you're saying you don't want Bobby to win. And you are being so upfront about it that, like, I wouldn't picture you to be the type of guy to play it on. But, yeah, anyway, I knew Greg was kind of not telling me a lot. But at the same time, I really did trust him when I looked him in the eye and I said, dude, are you going to vote me out or are we safe? And he told me, he's like, hey, we got you. So I kind of knew he was kind of like being like, you know, like the big brother or a dad who's not really telling you all of his plans, but he's kind of assuring you that you are to some degree part of them. So, like, you know, I knew that even though I wasn't part of his immediate plans, I knew that he was not quite ready to get rid of me. And that's why I kept, like, you know, working with him. Because a lot of people ask me, they're like, man, did you really trust Greg and Bruno, even though they didn't tell you about the chop shop? But I knew there was stuff they weren't telling me. The same way I wasn't telling them stuff. I wasn't telling them I'm a psychologist. You know, I wasn't telling them that, hey, I've went and I've talked to JP. I'm trying to set something up. I wasn't letting them know that. But there was a mutual understanding that, hey, we're all not telling each other the full truth, but we're at least being real about if we're voting you out. You know, that's where we kind of drew the line. You know? So, like, you know, the two of them were my closest allies early on.
So part of your strategy was making everyone think that you were really dumb. And, you know, you would sleep all the time and do all this kind of stuff. And did you do the same thing with Greg as well? Because remember that one time, Godfrey, when you were sitting on the couch with Greg and I think it was Greg, Bruno, you and me. And you asked the three of us, you said, hey guys, I have a philosophical question for you. What would you rather eat, a cockroach or a donkey dick?
Oh man, the double D.
was that all part of it too, or was that just you being you?
Nah, that was just me being me, trying to kill time, ask hypotheticals. I was actually being serious, man. Like, I was posing a serious question to the guys, you know, to see kind of like, you know, and maybe hopefully learn a little bit about them, learn, like, you know, their type of personalities. Like, a lot of my questions were hidden personality tests. Like, I was actually, by asking people would you rather, I was figuring out what their values were, what they kind of put on a pedestal. So often I'd even ask the girls, I'm like, man, what do you think? Would you rather be with a guy who has cheated on you versus, you know, or a guy who has kind of lied to you really badly? And, you know, I could just kind of see the questions, and, you know, depending on the answer they gave, I'd be like, okay, this person is a little more forgiving if they were saying that they'll go back with somebody who cheated with them, you know. Or I'd ask them, you know, like, would you rather eat this or get $20,000? I wouldn't put a ridiculous amount of money. I'd say, like, you know, okay, $5,000. I'm like, would you rather eat something really disgusting? Like, would you rather eat a cow's ass or get $5,000? Yeah. And depending on what somebody said, now if somebody gave the answer and said that, you know what, I'd eat the cow's ass for $5,000. I'd know that that's a red flag, because I'm like, man, this person's willing to do something so disgusting in order to get only $5,000. Now, what other disgusting things would they do for $100,000? Would they lie, deceive, cheat? And I'd ask them even like other like questions, like, you know, like, oh, would you rather like lie to a person? Would you rather like kick your best friend in the nuts for this? Like, you know, they were all like hidden questions. And like, surprisingly enough, I learned quite a lot about people by asking them that. I learned that people were not disgusted by things. And later on, we ended up having a competition where right away, I know this for a fact, just by, I asked Ashley the same question. No, Ashley, it wasn't Ashley, actually. It was Peely. I asked her a similar question, the tanky dick question. And by her reaction, she was mortified. Like, literally, like, everyone else was disgusted, but she was like, man, this is the most offensive thing I've ever heard. That is disgusting, Godfrey. Godfrey? Really? And, like, I knew right away, I'm like, man, Peely must have a really weak stomach. And sure enough, when we had a competition where they threw maggots in our head, like, you know, she was, like, freaked out by that, you know? Like, so a lot of that was a method to the madness, you know? It was fun, but there was still stuff to be learned from me, you know? And you know this, man. Like, anything anyone says in that house, like, that's an opportunity for ammunition, you know? You're, like, you don't know these people before you went in the house with them. So everything they say, it's an opportunity to learn how they think, you know, the things, the sense of humor they have and stuff like that, you know, just to help you kind of navigate through the game.
Yeah, for sure. That's really interesting because I remember distinctly there was one day where we were sitting on the couch, just you and I both.
Yeah.
And I was just doing it because I was bored, but you were doing it for the would you rather questions to find
stuff. That was
out.
Work, man.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And yeah, I remember Brittany was very disgusted by the questions we were asking.
Yeah, she was.
It was very funny. Okay, so week one, Risha goes home. And shortly after Risha goes home, Godfrey, we're in the backyard, we're on lockdown. And yeah. I have a question. This one is from Reddit, because I asked people some questions before to give their to ask you questions because they want to know stuff from you, Godfrey. And
before that question, I gotta say this.
What?
I actually give credit to you for me asking those questions because you know how it came about? I'd always see you sit at the back and you'd hold a podcast and you'd ask everybody who their favorite player was. And I'm like, are these guys that stupid that they're actually telling JP of all people? Maybe if it was anyone else, man, if it was Greg asking you that or Peely, man, tell them. But if JP is asking you this, I doubt he's doing it to kill time. And like people, like I could tell they were being honest with their answers. I'm like, holy, how is this guy getting people to spill out their strategy? Like you literally, like you didn't even hide it. You straight up asked, oh, Godfrey, so what's your best strategy? What do you think was the best one? And people were giving you all this intel. And that's why I was like, you know what? Maybe I should start digging stuff out. But I couldn't use the podcast gimmick. Because I'm like, you were already doing that. So I'm like, maybe if I can ask them, would you rather? I don't know, man. Like, you know, like I wanted to fish for information without them knowing. But like seeing you and Kevin do the podcast, that actually kind of inspired me to do that. Because I was like, man, people are so willing to talk candidly about anything. Because you went deeper with your podcast. You even asked people about love life, about, you know, who they're attracted to. And I'm like, man, you know what? Maybe they're going to give me some information.
Well, Godfrey, thank you for picking up on that because a lot of people on the watched the live feeds were very pissed off that I was doing these podcasts
in
the house.
I know. A lot of people were like, oh, he's so annoying. I'm like, guys, he's playing the game.
Yeah,
I'm like, you should be blaming the people taking part in the podcast because you don't have a gun to anybody's head. You weren't like, man, you guys got to come to this.
No,
people were
can't.
Willingly giving you information.
It was
and
great.
I would have done the same thing, man.
It was great, Godfrey. Yeah, like I and for those of you who did not watch the live feeds of Big Brother Canada 3, I used to host a podcast in the house talking about past seasons. And yeah, people would just openly talk about who their favorites were. And by saying who their favorites were, I was able to realize, okay, this person is a really good player. This is how this kind of this is the type of game.
That's
this kind
why
of
I kept telling you Victoria.
Yes, Godfrey. Exactly. Like you were the and it was so funny because you were saying Victoria and Jocasta and you know these terrible players. And I would always be like, Godfrey, just like, oh, get out of here, Godfrey. Like, you're just joking around, and you were like, no, yo, I'm serious, man. And you were just
to fall for that, man.
No, and it was so good. And Sarah Hanlon, kudos to her. Yeah. Because her and I had a final two deal, and she would always come up to me and she'd be like, you know what? I think Godfrey is just saying that because he's playing dumb. He actually knows everything about this game. And I was like, nah, Godfrey doesn't know what he's talking about. We don't need to worry about Godfrey. So good on you, Godfrey. That was that was amazing. Well done.
That's why I went a kind of a little in-depth to really sell it. So I wouldn't just say they're my favorite player, but like, yeah, man, I really like their game. I love, you know, I love how they carry themselves. Oh, but I'm pretty sure you guys were catching on later on. You were like, come on, man.
Yeah. Oh, that was so great, Godfrey. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So back to this question. So Richa leaves the house. So Rye631 from Reddit says, hey, Godfrey, do you think Richa is hot? She made the season for me. Now, this made me think of the time when we were in the backyard on lockdown, and we announced we were talking about Richa being bisexual, and then you were just like, oh my God, yo, I got to get a sex change now because you thought she was so hot. And then we had to explain – we were talking to you and explaining, no, Godfrey, that does not mean you have to get a sex change. Yeah. Did you just – was this just you being – playing up that you were dumb, or did you not hear the what we said properly?
I probably misunderstood the question, you know. Like, now I'm clear bisexual means attracted to both sexes. But at the time, like, I thought – I was like, oh. Like, as soon as I heard that, I was just like, oh, she likes girls. Yeah, but it slipped my mind that I'm like, no, she's bi, so I still have a shot at it.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So to answer the question then, Godfrey, you do find Richa hot, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. Definitely, like, crazy hot, man. Like, Richa is one of those girls that, like, literally, if I was in my 40s or 50s, how old?
40s.
But if I was in my 40s, like, she's the kind of girl that, like, you know, I would not be able to get. And even in my 20s, I still wouldn't be able to get. You know, she's like a really high, like, you know, the cream of the crop, man. That's what all I can say.
The cream of the
crop. She's banging, man. She's banging. Like, everything proportional, perfect.
All right. So week two, Godfrey, we have the first have not competition. This is when the Slot Brothers are formed. You and I make our pact. We eat food all the time. Now, we both managed to do okay on slop compared to everyone else because we would just, like, eat it and just, like, forget about it or whatever. What do you think, it just because of, again, I think the boarding school thing, that probably must have really helped you with not eating normal food, right?
No, absolutely, man. Like, I've eaten more disgusting stuff than that, you know. So the slop, it was just a walk in the park for me, you know. Like, it was not that bad. It was terrible. But after you ate it for 3 days, you kind of got, like, used to it, and you knew it was going to end. Well, in my case, I got it back-to-back 2 weeks. So, but yeah, it was still, it's definitely something that I would not want to do again. I don't want to go through eating slop. But yeah, going through boarding school, being from Zimbabwe, a place where sometimes you got to skip meals, man, and you don't really get to choose what you eat. You eat what's there, what's available. So slop was not that bad, man, because like I said, there are people who have to survive on less than that. And even, like, for me to have complained and made a big deal out of it in the house, that would have kind of been just shown my ignorance to, like, you know, what people are really going through, you know. Because it wasn't that bad. Hey, if we were only eating slop once a day, then I'd say, hey, come on, guys, this is inhumane. But at least you could eat as much slop as you want. So it was not that bad, you know, because, like, you could have – it was really your choice if you're going to starve because it's too disgusting or if you're going to eat it, you know.
Okay, so let's keep moving along. So week two, another major thing that happens in the house. So Bobby wins HOH. He nominates Kevin and Brittany. Kevin ultimately wins the power veto. He comes off. Cindy goes on the block. Now, shortly before Cindy goes – you have the famous altercation with her in the HOH room. What sparked that, Godfrey? Was it that you were just, like, tired because of the, you know, the poor sleeping conditions and the bad food? Did Cindy say something to you in particular? What exactly was it?
like, at the time, like, I don't know, man. Like, it was a bit of both, you know? Like, it was partly me really being annoyed at her, and at the same time, partly strategic, me thinking that, like, you know, by confronting her, there would be much to gain from that situation. But mostly it was because, you know, Cindy had really been throwing me under the bus. Like, she was campaigning hard to get me out. Bobby had told me, that, hey, man, Cindy, she's, like, putting in work to get rid of you. And at the same time, a few nights before, she had been telling me, she's like, man, Godfrey, you and I got to work together. You know, I got your back. We're going to go the whole way. And it was my first real taste of deceit and betrayal in the Big Brother house. So I didn't know quite how well to handle it. Because, like, thus far, well, I wouldn't say she's the only one who had lied to me, but she's the only one who I'd really caught in a lie like that, you know, like, and like, naturally, you're going to get upset, man, if somebody's telling you a heart to heart, going like, hey, man, I got you. And then the next day, they're like really, really campaigning hard to get you out. You know, you'd rather have somebody who did not promise you stuff prior. So it was really me being upset. And I really wasn't going to blow up on her that night like that. Because first of all, I didn't even know if she did break the camera or not. But what really made me go up and confront her is because earlier on, Greg had been saying, it's like, man, I can't trust Cindy. Look at her. She did it. Body language. I can tell. And I'm like, you know what? There seems to be a consensus that Cindy did it. And what really pushed me over the edge to do that is because I started hearing, like, through the grapevine that, man, people are saying that, you know what, maybe it's Godfrey. The guy's kind of strange. He's a weird dude, man. Who knows? Maybe he broke it for the hell of it. So I'm like, you know what? I got to deflect this target off of me. But just going like, hey, Cindy, I think Cindy did it, would not be quite as much. Like, it's really got to be dramatic. I got to confront her. And I also thought that would have earned me a lot more favor with Greg. It would have solidified my allegiance to him because I would have been like, man, I'm fighting your battles. I'm calling her out. You don't have the guts to do it. And it will kind of show people around the house that I was not just the guy sitting down. I was willing to kind of fight for them and stand up for them. I was willing to confront people. And I was also hoping that it would actually discourage people from nominating me because they'd be like, man, did you see what Godfrey did to Cindy, man? Like, dude, that guy's crazy. You don't want to have this guy on the block for a whole week. Who knows what he's going to do, man? Like, we better backdoor him. Let's not nominate him. So, like, that was my hope, yeah. And so that's what ended up going in there, you know. And, like, emotions got the best of me, you know, especially the fact that Cindy didn't really respond to it. She just kind of sat there and took it. And I was like, man, it was so frustrating because, like, at least say something because now you're making me look bad. Yeah.
No,
and I think that was a good play on her part, you know, not to defend herself, because if she had defended herself, that actually might have dug a bigger hole for her.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think she was pretty much already done no matter what, but I think if she would have fought back, 100% she would have had no chance.
Oh. And by keeping quiet, she actually made the target more on me, because now it made me look like the aggressor and her as the person who was in a bad spot. And all I got to say is I'm thankful nominations were done or else it would have been a different story, you know?
No, it's certainly. So Cindy goes home. And after that, Godfrey, we have the story time competition where it's the instant eviction. Kevin wins it. We famously have you going. It's you against Neha. You guys have your battle. You say it's Neha and Johnny, God and Greg, Godfrey and Bruno, all this stuff. You guys are going at it. Very entertaining. Ultimately, Kevin wins it. You're safe. Not a huge deal. What happens there is Neha goes home. What was your thought? What were your thoughts on Neha going home? That didn't really bother you too much, I guess, right? Were you threatened by Neha?
Like, to me, I was like I was disappointed with the way she went home because I felt really bad.
Right.
And like, I was really emotional even casting the vote. Like, it just felt like it was so wrong. I was like, man, you know, I'd hate to be in this situation. She didn't get a time to fight, plead her case or anything like that. And I just felt like she was really dealt the worst hand in the game because of that, aside from Rish. But her going home, I thought it was really beneficial to my game because I always had like this feeling that Neha had it out for me and that she was actually, she just didn't seem as somebody I could convince to work with me. I thought that she had already put her eggs in somebody else's baskets and she was not amongst the people who I kind of like, there was no chink in the armor for me to get in especially after me basically causing her to lose that HOH competition. I thought that was just like the end of the relationship, you know, game wise. And I didn't know if I could recover from that. Like, how am I going to explain that? Yeah, I kept putting you up, you know? So it was good for me that she went home that week. Definitely, I would have rather had her out of anybody go home that week.
Okay, so Neha goes home. Brittany wins the HOH, the Switching Gears competition. Mm-hmm. And you almost pulled that one out. You were trying to win that HOH with Willow, right?
Absolutely not.
No, you weren't. Okay.
I was not trying to win that at all. So like, Willow was just, she was annoying me so much on that thing. She's telling me, man, Godfrey, we got to win this. It's my first HOH. I'm like, yeah, it's my HOH too. And like, I'm pretty sure had we won that, she would have kind of wanted me to throw the HOH to her. And like, it just didn't feel right at the time, you know, like, and I was like, hey, what's even worse? What if I end up being the HOH and I got to put somebody up? And at that week, I did not feel like I was in danger if Sarah and Brittany won it. I actually thought that was the best case scenario because I knew who their target was. And like me and Willow winning it, I did not know who Willow's target was. I knew it was not going to be the same as Brittany's target because the two of them were not working together in the game. So like, it was not in my best interest to win that HOH competition, you know? And like, I was like, man, like I was cringing. I did not actively try to throw it, but I definitely did not want to win it, you know? Okay. I was like, what would look worse would have been me like dropping dramatically. Cause then they'll be like, dude, you're throwing. So I was like, you know what? I just got to fight it out and hope, you know, that like one of us does not win.
Okay. No, you did a great job of convincing me because I remember you taking your shoes off and asking production if you could.
Oh, absolutely.
So
that was no one's going to blame me. I'll be like, hey, like he's an idiot. He took his shoes off and he fell.
Oh, man. Okay. So Brittany wins this HOH. Greg is the target. During this week, before we get to Greg going home, I remember you telling a few stories. One kind of inspired the BBTV thing the next week after, and that was the talk show that I held in the HOH room when we were on lockdown with you, and I had Dr. Godfrey come on, and we talked about the full release. Do you remember that story, Godfrey?
Yeah, man, the full release.
Okay, was that actually something that you did, or were you just trying? Just
that was legitimate, man. That was legit advice. Like, I was trying to help you guys control your bowel movements better. You know, like I'm like, man, I'm giving these guys $1 million game, man. Like, I'm showing you what's up when it comes to staying healthy and getting the full release, man. Because when I got it my first time, like, it changed my life, man. I was like, man, I've been doing the number two the wrong way my whole life. This is not how it's meant to be done, you know? Yeah. And I was hoping that, like, by sharing that, you guys could kind of be like, man, you know, this guy kind of knows a little stuff about life, man.
And there you go, Godfrey. So yeah. What exactly is the full release and the method in order to get your proper bowel movements in the morning?
Well, like a lot of people like actually don't know this, but when you're going to the washroom and you're going to take a dump, like we're so used to using the toilet by just sitting down because, well, that's the most practical way to use it. You know, like you got to sit down on it. But like naturally, before the invention of the toilet, you got to think about it. How were people doing their business? And the proper form would be a squatting position. Like if we were going to go camping and you're going to take a dump, naturally, you're not going to like sit down like, you know, as you would on a toilet. No, that's going to feel awkward and it's probably going to hurt because you're pretty much like doing like a seat squat. The proper position is to squat below parallel. See, I can't really demonstrate because I'm like in here. But really squat, go down below parallel, and that's how you get the full release. By full release meaning like you are getting rid of everything, man. When you do it the other way and you just sit down on the toilet, like you're not getting the full release, man. You got like some leftover residual, you know, down in that colon, yeah. So like you really got a lot of people don't know about this, and there are a lot of devices, believe it or not, and hey, I'm not getting sponsored by anybody to say this, so I'm not trying to sell you guys, but hey, there are actually things you can buy called the potty squatter, and you can use that and sit down on it to get the full squat, or you can do it my style, the Godfrey style, just squat on the toilet. You know, put a little toilet paper on it. Take your shoes off, obviously, and then you can step on top of it. And then squat down, man. Get the full release. And it's really, it's healthy.
Oh, man. Godfrey, did you know that Richard Hatch, the winner of the first season of Survivor, is like a big proponent of the squatty potty?
No way. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah, so there you go, Godfrey. The Godfather and Richard Hatch, both big fans of the full release.
Exactly. The full release, man. You're like, okay. My hope is that every Canadian gets a full release, man.
All right.
The toilet companies won't tell you that because they got a patent on it, so they don't want people changing the design. You know, that's a little conspiracy, man. You know, I'll touch on that later on.
All right. There we go. Okay. The other big story from this week, I remember from the HOH room that you told us, was you said that your ex-girlfriend one time tried to poison your cat. Did this actually happen?
That actually did happen, sadly. Sadly. There's a lot of bad people in the world, man. That's all I got to say, man.
So
some people...
What happened, God?
Breakups can mess people's minds up, you know, make them do things that they wouldn't normally do. But like, hey, like, and this, it's still... Hey, like, I had no concrete proof, so it's still, like, speculation. But I'm saying based on the evidence I had, it led me to only one conclusion, that my cat had experienced some type of food poisoning.
And you gave the cat to her for a week, right?
Yeah, for a week. And my cat comes back like skinny, just looking frail, sneezing. And I'm like, man, yo, what's wrong with this? Yo, like, I know it's not the feline flu. And then next thing I know, I ask him, like, what have you been feeding my cat? And she's like, oh, I don't know. I just been giving it some stuff. Turns out, like, some of the boxes at a house were actually, like, expired. They were not even cat food. They were probably, like, food for a goldfish. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And, like, she's a cat person, too, so I know she knows better than that, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. And then this same girlfriend, she made you go rock climbing with her and her dad, right?
Yeah, man, tried to take me out, man. Not take me out on a date, but actually, like, take out the Godfather, man. I went with them at a date because we went down, it was in Collinwood. I think down in Barrie, there were a couple of caves. She was really big into rock climbing, you know, like, she was a really outdoorsy girl. So she takes me down, she's like, oh, me and my dad we want to go rock climbing with you. Which is kind of odd if you're potential father-in-law's idea of a good outing is, hey, let's go climb rocks, even though you have no experience doing that. We'll take care of you. Anyway, me trying to make a good impression, I show up with them. We go there, and this was no normal rock climbing. I thought it was like rock climbing like in an indoor place, but this was actually in the caves. Like, yeah, like it was like the real rock climbing, man, like the real adrenaline junkies. And, like, at that time, I don't want to back out and look like a punk who's not even scared to rock climb. But we go into the cave now. You know, going down is the easy part. We go in, we explore, we take pictures, whatnot. And now it turns out there's only one exit. They're like, oh, yeah, we got to go back out the same way we came in. I'm like, ah, how is that going to work? Because that thing is, like, 6-8 feet up in the air. And they're like, no, don't worry. You're going to lift my daughter up first, and then she's going to go up, and then you're going to lift me up, and then I'm going to go up. I'm like, and I'm going to be the last one in, the only guy who actually does not rock climb? How does that make any sense? But anyway, I'm not trying to, like, you know, cause a scene, so I let him go up. And then after that, they dangle the rope for me. They're like, oh, don't worry. Now all you got to do is just jump and catch the rope. And this was no easy jump, man. It was, like, literally, like, a couple yards, man, that I had to jump. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And, like, that time, I literally saw my life flash by. I was like, man, I'm going to fall down, probably hit my head. And, like, how am I going to get medical attention? They're going to have to call the fire department, which is, like, a mile away. And just the admiral, man, by the grace of God, I survived, man. You know, like, I was able to make that leap, and then I held onto the rope. And I had to, like, pull myself off because I had nobody to give me that extra push. But yeah, it was not a good experience.
Well,
I have not done well with rock climbing, man.
Well, maybe Bobby can give you a few lessons now.
Yeah.
But as we later saw on Big Brother Canada, Godfrey, you've got a pretty good vertical, so you can jump pretty high. So.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So Greg goes home this week. Before Greg goes, let's just talk about Proppa, Godfrey. A lot of people don't know this, but you actually were the person that taught Greg Proppa. When did you first start saying Proppa?
Jeez, like, I don't even know. Like, I guess just probably high school or after that. It just sounds like the... best word. When you can't come up with a word, like, you know, saying yeah, alright, man, that's kind of boring. Like, you know, saying proper, it's like a, like, it shows that you've acknowledged it, and at the same time, it's a good way to end a conversation. Hey, proper, man, I proper, and it's a good segue too. So yeah, like, I don't even know, man. It's just a really useful word, man. Everybody should have proper in their vocabulary. It can mean many different things, man. From something actually being proper, and it can just mean yes. Proper.
So Greg goes home, Godfrey, and Bruno wins HOH, which is, like, really good for you because it's your buddy. You know, you're safe. You're not going anywhere for the week. So this was a pretty chill week for you. Johnny goes home. But the one big thing that happens this week was BBTV, and we had this task where we had to put on a TV show or several TV shows throughout the day and do all this, these things. You rapped for the talent competition. where you said, did you say, Britt, you got nice tits? Is that what you said?
Oh, I said something about Ashley's pimples and Britney's nipples. Oh, I said, my bad. I saw your nipples. Yeah.
That's right.
yeah. Like, yo, Brit will kill me if she sees this. She's like, gosh, don't say that again.
I love
that. That's between you and me and the millions of other people who watched it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. We have millions of people watching this, Godfrey.
Yeah.
More like 12.
Nah, 12 million.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 12 million. We have 12 times the amount of people that actually watched the show watching this podcast. Okay. So during that, we get a reward, and we get a bunch of alcohol, Godfrey. And you had a lot of alcohol that night. You were feeling
pain. I had quite a bit, man. Quite a bit.
So why did you get so drunk? Was it because you were on slop? Was it because you were stealing everyone's alcohol? Do you know exactly what happened?
I have no idea, man. All I know is that I kept asking them, like, hey, let me have some of yours. Let me have some of yours. And, like, I didn't take in that, like, I had been on slop for the past week, so I had barely any food in my system, and I just got way drunker than I normally would, man. Like, I was literally like, God, man. I was in another world at that time. You know, I was playing a different game.
Do you remember offering to Brittany and Sarah that, like, they were trying to convince them to make out, and you said that if you and I would make out in order for them to make out? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Would you have done that? I was willing to do it. I feel like, would you have done that?
At the time for a good make-out session, yo, like, you got to sacrifice to see that, man. It's not that often you see Brittany, Blair, and freaking Ashley Wood make out. So it seemed like a fair bargain for me.
Oh my gosh. And one of my favorite things, we were all in the hot tub. Everyone was playing Spin the Bottle.
Yeah.
And then Zach and Brittany made out. So then Zach told Ashley she can kiss anyone she wanted. And I remember you put your hand up and I put my hand up. And so Zach's like, oh, you can make out with JP. And then you're like, yo, JP, come on, man. We were bros. You shouldn't have done that to me.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to forfeit and be like, you know what? I think Godfrey would better handle this. But JP wanted some for himself, man. It's like, nah.
Yeah.
Not today, bro.
Yeah, Godfrey, that was when it was the Slop Brothers. That was when we started going downhill. Was that night.
It was the turmoil, man.
But after that, we were both very intoxicated, and we were both eyeing up that strawberry rhubarb pie.
Oh yeah, we're talking about that pie. Yeah,
We made a pie, the two of us, at like 2 a.m, and we were eating it, and we were waiting for it to cook. And I don't remember. I think you remember this too, Godfrey. But we were sitting on the counter talking, and you offered me a final two deal. Do you remember this?
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, I remember that. I remember. I'm like, the Snap Brothers, we got to make it to the end.
Do you remember? Do you remember exactly what you said?
I don't remember the entire thing. I just remember I was mad at production for some reason, and I was just like, really, yeah. I was saying a whole bunch of stuff, man.
You came up to me and you said, "Yo, JP, we gotta go to Final Two yet, man. We with the Slop Brothers, and you know why I want to take you to the end?" And I said, "No, Godfrey, why do you want to take me to the end?" And you're like, "Cause I can kick your ass in every competition, yo." And I was like, "All right, I'm down, Godfrey. This sounds good."
Alcohol brings out, you know, a lot of honesty in a lot of people, man.
Yeah, no, it was hilarious. I loved it. It was so funny. And then
drunk words are sober thoughts.
It really is. It really is. Because the next day we talked and you were like, "Yeah, I'm still down for the final two." And I was like, "All right."
Yeah, dude, I was actually going to honor it, man. I'm like, "Hey."
And I was
like, "Am I even going to make it in the final two? Like, I might as well make a deal, you know?" Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And then you were puking all night, and Ashley was taking care of you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to Ashley, man. And that slop bucket.
That slop bucket, man. That was a fun night. Anyway, so you know, we're all hungover the next day. We're napping and whatever, taking it easy. Johnny goes home that week. And the next week, it's the before and after competition, week 5. A very infamous week. This was kind of when the Godfrey Show began. It stopped being Big Brother Canada 3, and it started being the Godfrey Manguiza Hour. And so Zach wins HOH.
Yeah.
You were close to winning that. You're in the tiebreak round. Were you trying to win that one?
I was trying to win that one, actually.
Why were you trying to win that HOH?
Like, for that one, I had reached a point in Bruno ignoring all advice I gave him to use the special power. And like at the time, I had told him, I'm like, man, you got to use that special power and you got to put up JP and Zach to go home, the double veto. And I'm like, one of them goes home for sure. And like, you've destroyed like a power couple. That's at the time, that was before Zach and Ashley were kind of being seen as solidified. So like, you two were the bigger threat because I thought you guys were like the closest guys in the house. But then as the weeks were going by, I noticed now Zach was even getting stronger. Now he had Ashley on his side and their relationship seemed to be even much more stronger and much more beneficial to him because Ashley was best friends with Peely. So now he not only had like you as his boy, he had an even stronger alliance with Ashley and Peely was kind of going to go there. And I'm like, man, who's to say Kev's not even going to go there? And then you had the other side of the house, which was kind of me, Bobby, and Bruno. And I did not know at the time where Sarah and Brittany were standing because I thought they were kind of just in the middle of things. They were just kind of waiting for the guys to take each other out. So I was like, man, everything is so up in the air. Anything can happen. The only people, believe it or not, that I actually thought would not put me on if they won the HOH was I thought it would have been Bruno would have put me up and Bobby. And I thought you wouldn't put me up. And I thought Brittany wouldn't put me up. But I knew for sure Zach would have put me up. Kev, I wasn't sure if would have put me up. And I knew for sure Ashley would have put me up and Peely. So I was like, man, I got to win this for my own sake. And so like in that competition, I just went hard. I was like, man, I got to win this. And I got to put up Peely. Not Peely, what am I saying? That's ridiculous. But yeah, at the time I was like, man, I gotta win the competition. And we had discussed this with Bruno and everybody else. And I'm like, if I win, I have to put up Zach and Ashley, the two of them. Cause I thought that the whole house would kind of rally against that. It was a good rationale that the two are in a couple. They're going to work together. And I thought everybody would kind of go along with it. Well, obviously, like, maybe not you or Ash or Kev. But I thought for the most part, it would make more sense than me because I remember Bruno wanted me to put up Kevin and Zach if I won. And that was kind of the expectation from my side of the house. And even like Brittany, they were like, oh yeah, so Kev and Zach is going home. And I was just telling them that. But my ideal scenario was to put up Zach and Ashley. And if one of them won the veto, I probably wouldn't even have put Kevin up, because Kevin I actually trusted more than I did Zach. And I thought Kevin in the long run would have worked with me than would Zach have. So like if somebody won the veto, I would have probably put up Willow instead. But yeah, I really wanted to win that competition, man, because I really thought there was a high chance that either me or Bruno would go up after that.
Wow. Well, you really had your finger on the pulse, because, well, for one, I would not have put you up if I would have won that week. And two, Zach really did want you out for whatever reason, I guess because he didn't know where you stood. And I tried convincing him to go for Bruno, who you were talking about, but...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I could tell at that time you were, like, pretty sincere, because I was like, man, no one's going to have an hour conversation just to blow smoke up somebody's ass. So I knew, like, you were more legitimate to actually, like, you knew what was up. You knew that, like, Bruno would have been a much more bigger threat than me. And he would have been a much more formidable challenger than I would have been in terms of strategically aligning people, rallying people against somebody. And, yeah, I was like, the worst case scenario happened for me, and Zach did end up putting me up.
Yeah, and he puts you up next to me, the slop.
Yeah, and you. Yeah, like I was like, this makes absolutely no sense to me, man. Yeah, like I was hoping there was a backdoor plan. I'm like, man, I hope they are backdooring Bruno or Bobby, because those are the only two I knew who made sense. Like I would have rather them stayed, but at that time I was like, man, it's either me or one of those two, because I knew for sure, like one of the girls were not going up.
And again, Godfrey, that was what I thought the plan was too, was that it was going to be a backdoor of Bruno or Bobby.
Oh.
And I was so willing to get one of them out that I was like, yeah, you know what? Zach was like shaming me because I didn't win that HOH and I wasn't winning any competitions and it wasn't helping.
Yeah.
Me, and he was really pissed and he thought I was throwing it. So I was like, no, I'm so loyal to you. I'll work for you, Zach. I'll do whatever, which was very stupid of me. But yeah, ultimately, what happens is, yeah, you and I are in the block, and we're both like, okay, like I know what's going on. I knew you kind of had an idea what was going on. You were kind of playing dumb, but we had this like really long conversation. Mm-hmm. We're in the HOH room talking about everything.
Yeah.
I kind of laid the chop shop out for you, 'cause I knew about it, but I didn't want to tell you explicitly. And then you kind of got on board.
Oh, I didn't even catch on to that, man. Yeah. Yeah, like I got on board when you were telling me about how dangerous Bruno was in the game, because like I agreed with that. Like I really saw Bruno as one of the, even though he was my closest ally, I knew that he was going to be the guy who was going to beat me. Like there was no denying that. Like I was working with him because he was showing me loyalty and he was really helping me out. And he was one guy who I knew I could trust. But at the same time, you were raising a really valid point. And I was like, man, Godfrey, are you going to play with him the entire time or are you going to let him be detrimental to your game? So, like, I knew for sure. I'm like, man, Bruno definitely is a tough guy. And, like, it would be in the best interest of everyone in the house if he went home, because at least we have a shot of winning the game now, you know?
Yeah, it's just – and I left that conversation feeling good. Ultimately, though, we go into the veto competition.
Oh.
Zach wins, doesn't use the veto. And all hell breaks loose, Godfrey. You bring out the sleeping giant speech.
Yeah.
You go, I want your blood on these hands, going at Zach. What was the mindset before that veto ceremony with going out with a speech like that?
Oh, like at that point, like I was just really irritated and annoyed at Zach, at the fact that, like, you know, he would try to get rid of me in such a way. Like, I just felt like it was not straight up. I would have rather had him nominate me and tell me I was the target. But obviously, Zach's not an idiot. He's not going to tell me straight up that, hey, by the way, I might want to get rid of you too. So, like, he played it the way he would have played it. But at the same time, I was just upset that on top of that, he put me next to you, somebody who at that time I knew I did not have the votes, because Cindy was not in the house yet. And I knew for a fact that when it came down to it, it would have been a tie and Zach would have sent me home. So, like, that's really why I was upset. And the only way, like, my Hail Mary at the point was, hey, maybe if I call him out and if I can convince people, if I can convince the person I was really campaigning for was Kev out of everybody else. So that whole speech was pretty much directed more so at Kev than anyone else in the house.
Wow. Okay.
Also, it was like obviously directed at Bruno and Sierra and them, but they were kind of on board already. But the only person I really needed to keep me would have been Kev, because I knew Ashley for sure was going to go with Zach, and I knew Peely was going to go with Ashley, and I knew obviously Zach's intention was to keep you. So I was like, man, like I'm counting on Kev. And Kev had been hearing me out a couple of weeks prior to that. He had been kind of entertaining my conversations. So I thought, I'm like, man, I really got to get Kevin, man.
Interesting. Okay.
And at the time, I didn't know how close you were to him. I actually thought you guys didn't talk at all, because I barely saw you guys together in the house, man.
Yeah, that was probably like one thing I actually did that wasn't too bad was...
if I knew how close he was with you guys and the whole Newport, I would never have done that yet. I wouldn't have wasted my time doing that, because I would have known there's no shot he's keeping me. But at the time, I actually thought that, like, because Kevin's got a good poker face, man. Like, he was really saying, yeah, gosh, I'll consider it. I'll see. I'll tell you the night before. We'll see how we can work it out.
Very interesting stuff. So everything's going down. That speech happens. It's crazy. A couple days later, we have that. There's the proposition that Big Brother gives us, and they say, hey, we're going to put two people up for a task. And ultimately what the task is you get locked in a room and one person can decide to leave the game at that point and walk away with $10,000. If you would have gone in, because at one point people said, hey, Godfrey and JP, you guys do it because you're on the block. If you and I had both been in there, Godfrey, man, would you have taken the 10 grand?
I think for sure I would have taken the 10 grand, like no doubt in my mind. I think any situation in life where somebody tells you, if you press this button, you get 10 grand, you press that button, man. It doesn't matter if there's a promise of you getting more money. If you don't, you press that button, because you don't even know if you're going to be alive for the next couple of days to get the bigger reward. So like at that point, I really think I would have taken the money. I would have felt bad about it, because obviously the whole, hey, you know, we came on the show, you know, you don't want to go out like that. But I'm like, hey, that's third place money right there. And it's like, and think about the position you and I were in the game. Both of us were on the block. Like, you had a little more confidence than me at that time that you were staying. Yeah. So for you, I guess you would not want to express that. But now imagine if you were in my position where, like, I had done the math. If Cindy hadn't come into the house, you know, like, it was looking really bad for me. Because I knew, I was like, it's going to be an uphill battle. The only way I'm going to convince Zach to say, let's get rid of JP, is if I can be like, hey, man, like, I seen his birth certificate. He's actually the devil, yo. He's undercover. That is the only way they would have said, okay, let's get rid of JP. Like, I'd have to say, man, JP is like, he's a criminal, man, or whatever. I'd have to come up with something. And at that time, it was just going to be tough. Because even my own allies were telling me, like, hey, if you don't have the vote, that's it, bro. You're gone. We can't do anything for you. Yeah. So I think in that frame of mind, I would have taken it, absolutely. If I were not on the block, then there's a possibility that I wouldn't have. And nevertheless, it would be a stupid decision, because look at Bobby. He was not on the block. And he went home the very next week. So, like, the game's got a funny way of playing things out, man.
Yeah, Bobby and Cindy went home right after that. And then, yeah, Bobby right after Cindy. So interesting how that worked out. They both declined it. So anyway, the week goes on. The house starts to flip. And if you want to get the whole story in detail, you can check out, again, Spencer McRae's interview with Godfrey. Godfrey kind of breaks it down a little bit more in depth. But basically, you managed to flip the house with Cindy coming in with some of this information. She says that she's going to give you your vote. You managed to somehow bring together the two warring factions of Brittany and Sarah and Bruno and Bobby, who don't really trust each other at all. But you managed to pull it off. You've got these votes. Comes together at the last minute. You must be feeling like $1 million. You come to me the night before, where Zach and I are in the pantry, and you're like, hey, man, like, I just wanted to say good game. I know I'm going home tomorrow. And then me and Zach are just like, oh, Godfrey, we're going to miss you, man. Like, sorry. How, like, describe, you must have been feeling, like, so great at that moment.
What can I say? Hey, man, I got a flair for the dramatic. Like, at that point, I was like, man. Like I said, Sun Tzu, the art of war, when you're close, appear to be far. I knew even though I literally had it in the bag at that point to stay, I still had to kind of make it seem like I'm going home. Because, like, I figured, I'm like, man, if you guys even get nervous a little bit, because I know, like, you're a pretty convincing guy, man. Like, you were able to convince a lot of people to do things that are stupid in the game, yeah. So I was like, man, if JP, if I even give him the slightest hint that I could be staying, that would have motivated you to go out to Sarah and really campaign to her and be like, hey, Sarah, why would you get rid of me over Godfrey? And, like, by doing that, I would have given you a fighting chance, which I did not want to do at this point. And at the, you got to think about it this way. I wasn't just against you. I was also against Zach, Ashley, Kev, Peely. So I'm like, man, if JP finds out something's going on, all of those guys, they could just, like, kind of pressure somebody into changing their vote. Because that's all it takes in the game, man. It's that one conversation, you know. Like, sometimes it can be literally just saying something like, hey, you know, Godfrey, like, do you think you can beat him in a physical comp on the final? Something like that could dissuade somebody, you know. Especially Sarah is who I didn't want you to talk to. Because I thought you had a better chance of convincing her to keep you than you would have at convincing Bruno and Bobby and Cindy, who were sold on sending you home. So, like, I was really, that entire week was trying to keep you away from Sarah and for you guys not to even talk about it. And I kept telling Sarah, I'm like, don't listen to JP. If he comes up to you, don't listen to what he's saying. He's lying. I know this. But yeah, like, that's why I came down and I did the whole bow. Cause, like, that was the night before and you were kind of expressing doubt. Or I don't know if you were actually thinking you might go home or if you were just telling me, but I remember sitting next to you and I'm like, man, JP, at that time I was milking it too much. I'm like, ah, JP, man, I can't believe I'm going to go home. And you're like, no, Godfrey, it could be me. And I was like, ah, oh. I was like, why did he say that? Yeah. I'm like, does he know something's happening? Like, is he actually worried or is he just saying that? So I was like, man, I got to convince him that I'm really going home. Because if JP gets worried, like, all it takes is one conversation, man. Just one. And you could literally change everything. I've worked so hard the entire week to keep in place.
Well, brilliant gameplay by you, Godfrey, because you had me convinced that you were 100% going home by your attitude. So great job. For those of you who may have missed it watching the show, if you didn't watch the live feeds, Godfrey and I, right in the morning of that day, we were both have-nots that week.
Oh.
And Godfrey and I both made an agreement that we were going to make a sandwich. And whoever got evicted was going to go out on stage and eat the sandwich in front of the live audience because we hadn't eaten in a week.
Yeah.
So you kindly, Godfrey, offered to make the sandwich because you were like, yeah, you know, I'm going home. I got to make this sandwich. And then so you make it and you put it on a plate in the kitchen. And I was like, oh, man, okay, Godfrey, like, I'm sorry. You're going to have to eat
that.
That's
why I kept asking you what you wanted on it because I was like, the sandwich ain't for me. It's for you. So I'm like, you better tell me what you want me to put on this, man.
Well, and Godfrey, I should have told you that I actually wanted a happy face, not a sad face drawn on the inside of it. Oh my gosh. So anyway, Arissa Cox announces the vote. It's five. She says, by a vote of 5-4, what's going through your head at that moment?
Ooh. At that moment, like, I thought, I was like, man, I am staying now. When I heard the 5-4, because I thought, if anything, it would have been unanimous.
Right.
Because my logic was that if Sarah, well, I didn't think it would be unanimous, but I thought if I was going home, instead of a 5-4, it would have been a 6-3.
Right.
Because the way I was looking at it was like, if Bobby flipped, chances are he would have told Bruno that I'm flipping, and I don't think he would have messed up his boy's game like that. He would have probably, they would have both flipped. And I thought the same with Sarah. If Sarah was flipping, she would have told Brittany in advance that, hey, change your vote because we're flipping. So, like, you know, when I saw the 5-4, that's what I was praying for. I was like, man, you know, it actually happened. These guys actually came to their senses and realized to do the smart thing for once. Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people asked me, they said, oh, like, you and Godfrey, you didn't know when it was 5-4, but you knew 100% you were safe.
I knew 100% that I was staying.
And I knew 100% I was going home once it was 5-4.
You knew it? Oh, yeah. Like, you're like, something's wrong, not right.
Yeah, because I thought it was going to be a clean sweep because everyone told me, oh, yeah, we're keeping you. And little did I know, the Godfather went behind my back, worked his magic, and convinced the whole flip
the
entire house.
You don't listen to anybody the night before eviction, man. Even when they told me I was staying, I was so confident the whole week. But that night, just before the votes, before everybody's going in, that's the scariest part.
Right.
Because, like, you don't know. Like, anything, if somebody looks at the other person the wrong way, they might take that as a sign that, hey, change the vote. Yeah, so I was like sweating. I'm like, man, the only one I was worried about Bobby because I'm like, he's the only one who would fall for that. I'm like, man,
Bobby. Well, yeah, Bobby came to his senses. Made a
he came move. Through, man. Yeah, came like if he him. Hadn't made that decision, I would have gone home, you know. And like he really, like I could tell he had faith in me that I was gonna return the favor if he did that.
And ultimately, Bobby, poor Bobby, yeah. Goes home a couple weeks
later. I failed to do that.
So the following week, okay, I go home. Week 6, Peely wins HOH somehow. And Cindy leaves the house. But really, Godfrey, like, you got nominated this week, but nobody was, like, really that mad at you, even though you were the one who pulled off this flip. Everyone blamed it all on Cindy. Why do you think everyone just completely forgot about you?
I think, like, part of the reason, it was two reasons for doing that. Like, here's what I found, what I've noticed throughout the game is that usually when somebody survives an eviction, people are not so, if it's a split vote, people are not going to be mad at the person who just survived the eviction. Because think about it, I had, even though, like, technically speaking, I did send you home, but if we're gonna, like, you know, look at the game, I really had no say in you going home that night because I didn't vote. I was just sitting down. The people who did have a say were Bruno, Cindy, Sarah, and Ashley Peely. So by that 5-4 vote, they betrayed each other because they were not being real to each other. You know, they lied to each other, obviously, because I'm pretty sure Kevin didn't go in there thinking, oh, Bruno's not going to vote the same way. He went in there with the expectation that Bruno's going to vote the same with him, as did Ashley, with the expectation that Sarah will vote the same with them. So I think they were more upset at each other than they were at me. And I think Zach was even more upset at the other 5 people who kept me than he was at actually me. And another thing that I think Cindy ended up taking the rap for it is because when you do a move like that, it's a good idea not to own it. Don't go around saying, hey, man, yeah, you see what I did there? I got rid of JP. I'm like, don't say that. Like, when I survived eviction, you want to know what I did? Willow came up to me, and she said, Godfrey, wow, you're really smart, eh? So you knew you were staying this whole time? I'm like, what are you talking about? You're like, I'm as surprised as you. I'm like, I'm just happy. Like, I was playing dumb. I was asking people, like, man, so did you vote for me? Yeah. But I wasn't, like, out there saying, hey, guys, you know, ha-ha, I got you. Like, you know, because, like, the minute you say that, that's now making me a more dangerous player to be around because they're like, see what Godfrey did this week? He kept himself safe. We really need to get rid of this guy now. But instead, I kind of gave the credit to Cindy. And when people even asked me, they're like, hey, so what happened this week? I was like, hey, man, like, I don't know. Cindy told me she might work out something for me and she could give me votes. And I guess she came through. I don't know what she did. I guess she went and talked to everybody. Yeah, go figure. So, like, I think people were more, they looked at her as the mastermind. And I even remember Zach saying this when he was, like, in a room with Ashley. Like, I think I was, like, asleep or whatever. Well, I was clearly not sleeping. But, yeah, I even heard him saying this, Ashley asking Zach, going, like, oh, how do you think Godfrey was able to do that? And Zach was even like, oh, you think Godfrey did that? He can't do that, man. That was obviously Cindy. She's the one we're worried about. We need to worry about. So, like, you know, I think that kind of helped deflect it off of me. Like, had I behaved differently that week, and we're like, hey, guys, see, I got you guys. Don't even mess with me in this game because stuff like this is going to happen. It would have just made me look more of a dangerous player. But instead, I said, hey, I had no part in it. It was all Cindy's plans. She masterminded this. She's the one you guys got to get rid of. You know, I'm just a pawn in the game. And yeah, I think that helped me out a lot. And a lot of other people, like, you know, I saw them implement the same strategy. Even Zach did a similar thing when he stayed during his own, when Bruno used the veto on him. And I know Zach had a lot to do with Bruno using that veto because he obviously told him something a few weeks ago saying, hey, if you help me out, I'm going to help you in advance. You know, like Bruno didn't just randomly do that, but instead he played it so dumb that when we went and asked him, when I asked him, I'm like, why do you think he did it on you? He said, I don't know. I guess he just decided to. Yeah. So like, that's kind of what people, what you got to do, you know, like when you have just survived eviction, you can't say it was all me. You got to give the credit to someone else. That way the people are more upset at that person because they're like, they're the reason you're staying, you know? And as in Bruno's case, Sarah and Brittany were more pissed off at Bruno than they were at Zach for surviving eviction.
So Cindy goes home the following week. So yeah, I mean, again, great job surviving that. The next week, it's the triple eviction. Bobby goes home, and then Willow and Kevin go home. You talked about that reaction. You were a little upset at Bruno, but you're still safe throughout all of this. Things are going really well for you. Mm-hmm. Is this kind of when you started to realize, hey, I might actually have a shot at winning this game?
Like, at that point, like, during the triple, I was a bit nervous because I had a strong gut feeling that they were going to have a triple eviction. And, like, you know, surviving a double is hard enough. Now you got to survive a triple eviction. So I was, like, really kind of stressed out going into that. And I knew, though, like, you know, that HOH would have been a must win for me. Like, I had to really go guns blazing because I knew Cindy was already gone. She had already paid for my crimes. And now I'm like, man, we're running out of targets. Bobby's gone. Right now, me and Bruno, one of us has to win this because if we don't win, I knew for sure we were both going on the block. And if by any chance Bruno won the veto, then I would have been going home. So I was really, really worried, and I was counting on either Sarah or Brittany or me and Bruno to win that and not the diaper gang. And then when Brittany did win, I was like, geez, like, you know, life is good right now. Because I knew for a fact, I'm like, there is no way at all I'm going home. Next thing you know, she nominates the right people, you know. We go in the room, me, Sarah, Brittany, we talk about it. We're like, okay, she asked me, who do you want to go up? I'm like, obviously, I want Zach to go up there. I want Zach and Ashley. Sarah's like, no, Kevin and Zach. Kevin is stronger player. And I'm trying to be like, no, but why would we piss off, like, you know, Peely and Kev, you know, like, let's go one at a time, you know. By taking two people from the showmans, we've declared war with the other half. Why not just go after one half and leave Kevin? Because, like, Kevin and Peely were already under the impression that we were coming after the showmasters. We wanted them out, you know? So, like, it was in their best interest to stay with Zach and Ashley and fight to get rid of us. But anyway, I was pleased with the nominations. I'm like, hey, Zach's going home. I'm happy. Bruno wins the veto. I'm even more happy. Next thing you know, he uses it. I'm like, okay, now I'm sweating. Because now I'm like, man, does Brittany think that I had something to do with Bruno winning the veto? Because if she does, she might retaliate by putting me on the block and saying, Godfrey, you were lying to us. You knew this was going to happen. But lucky enough for me, she knew I had kind of no plan, no play in that. And then she puts up, unfortunately, she ends up having to put up, take him off and put Willow, who I did advise her. I'm like, hey, Willow's got to go up there. You know, she's got to go on and then we got to get rid of her. I would have rather had Peely go home that night and Kevin stayed. But, like, both sides of the house, like, everyone was so dead strong and getting rid of Kevin, you know. They're like, he's got to go. He's too smart. The reason I wanted Kevin on is because I trust him a little more than I did trust Zach. And I really knew deep down in my gut, I'm like, I think Kev will work with me. And I think Kev is waiting to take that shot at Zach. So why get rid of him, you know? But unfortunately, he ended up having to go home that night, you know?
Yeah, poor Kev. It was a sad night in the jury house when Kevin walked in. I was very disappointed.
Absolutely, man. Because the rationale made no sense to me. They were like, oh, he can win comps. I'm like, guys, it's 8 of us in here, 6 of us, or 7, whatever.
Can't
I'm like,
all,
you man. Really think he's going to win all the competitions? And it just made no sense to me because I was like, now the ratio, it's way more girls and it's only 3 guys, you know? And like, who's to say they might want to build something and be like, hey, we tired of carrying these guys, get rid of them, you know? So like, I really thought that was kind of like a foolish move. And if it was more in my hands, I would have had it the other way.
Interesting stuff. Okay, so Kevin goes home. Following week, Ashley wins head of household. You go on the block, Godfrey, when she wins HOH, but Brittany saves you with her secret power. What was going through your head when you're on the block, it's eviction night, you think Brittany's probably, you're safe anyway, right? But
yeah.
Still, when you see her pull that first out, when she pulls out that first safe thing, what's going on?
I didn't know she had 2 of those bad boys, man. Like that week, it was, you know, Sarah was set to go home. No, I was on the block with Brittany, actually.
Yes.
But yeah, Brittany was going home. And lucky for me, I had actually been more nice and respectful of Brittany that week. I was making her food, you know, kind of like giving her a farewell. And I was not like brushing it off. And it also helped that I was on the block with her. So she was not looking at me as the bad guy, you know?
Right.
But yeah, like I still did not expect her to use that on me. Because I thought that for sure she's going to probably save it for tomorrow. I don't know. Keep it as a souvenir. But yeah, when she like uses that to take me off, that's when I was like, okay, something's going down, man. It's going to be like a big move. But then unfortunately, Bruno had to go in my place, which was a really sad time for me, you know, because like I didn't want Bruno to go home. But at the same time, I was happy that Brittany at least saved me. At least she wanted me in the game, you know, and that really helped my relationship with her going forward. Like I had a final 2 deal with her as well, which I did plan on honoring if it came down to it. But yeah, it was just like surprising. And at the same time, I was just in utter shock, man, because the whole house was flipped at that point. It was like 2 people who had not been nominated, not even had a time to play for a veto. Now we're going home. So it was just like, it was just really, really crazy.
Crazy.
Like the vote was literally discussed as we sat down with the nominees. Imagine how crazy that is. There was no time to go in the pantry. Like we were literally, I was literally sitting there and I'm like, so we're voting out Zach, right? And then Sarah just shakes her head. And then Brittany's like, and at that point, I was like, oh, okay. I guess Bruno's going home then. Jeez. And this is all being discussed as they are there. Yeah.
Man, crazy. Sad day for Godfrey Manguiza. Black and Brew comes to an end. Bruno goes home.
Zach survives for another week, man. And this guy, the only time he's been on the block, the first 2 times he was on the block, he was on there for only 5 minutes.
Yeah. Like and not 5 minutes.
The first time was the triple, and the second time was with the power.
Yeah, 5 minutes, and Godfrey, 5 minutes in total. Not 5 minutes each time, 5 minutes in total. It's
5
crazy.
Minutes total, yeah.
He's barely on there. I mean, the guy has horseshoes up his butt.
I know.
It's amazing. okay, so the following week, he's almost like, you were the escape artist, Godfrey, really, of the block, but
Zach's the real escape artist.
Yeah, Zach really almost was.
This guy literally goes in like that. You don't even see him, man. You're like, he's on, now he's off.
Yeah, crazy.
Next thing you know, he's the one casting the vote to evict.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, you were on the block just now, man.
So Zach survives. Ultimately, though, he goes home the next week when Sarah wins. Sarah wins, so Zach goes home that week. Peely goes home in the double eviction. Nothing too crazy going on those weeks. The following week, it's the final 4. Sarah wins HOH. She puts up you and Ashley. Really, it only comes down to the veto. Ashley somehow wins another veto. Keeps winning these things, Godfrey. What did you think about that? Because that really, she just kind of came out of nowhere with those wins.
Hey, I was like really impressed because like the whole time, my whole perception of Ashley had always been like, she was not a fighter. She was kind of a girl just sitting down, letting it happen. But she surprised me when she started winning the Beatles because I thought when Zach was gone, she was going to crumble and literally be crying like, hey, you know, where's Zach? But, like, she was holding her own. She was winning the comps, and she wasn't just winning, man. She was, like, embarrassing us. It was, like, literally, I was ashamed some of the times she was putting up in these video comps. She was putting up 20 minutes, and I'm at 114. I don't know how many hours that are. Probably ask Peely, or it might be 2 days, yo. But, like, it was, like, crazy, man. And she was winning them back to back to back. And that's when, like, her profile was really going up, man. And I was like, man, she's going to be a contender. Not only does she have friends in the jury, but now she even has a case. And, yeah, it was surprising to everybody in the house. She's the last one we expected to pull through all those comp wins.
Yeah, she really went on a tear there. And that led to her surviving the final four when she probably mm-hmm. – it was 3-on-1, manages to survive.
Yeah.
Brittany goes home. It's final three now. You go out into the backyard, yeah. Godfrey. And how happy were you when you saw part one of the final HOH was a stairs competition, something that you did pretty much every day in the house and something that Sarah and Ashley did combined zero yeah. times while they were in the house?
It was just jubilation, man. I was, like, happy. I'm, like, literally, I'm, like, man, they built this comp for me. Yeah. Shout out to whoever decided that's the competition, man. I was happy. Like, I knew right there. I was, like, it's done, you know. I don't even know. Like, I told the girls prior to the competition. I'm, like, you know, we can work this out. You guys can just forfeit, and I will win. Save yourself the embarrassment of actually losing. But, hey, they wanted to fight it out, man. And for a minute, Ashley actually gave me a run for my money in that competition. Like, early on, we were neck and neck and neck, and it all came down to who had the most cardio. It definitely wasn't who had the most fight, because all three girls, they were in it. They were trying to win that, man. But then, like, you know, fortunately for me, I just had, like, the more cardio in me. I'd been eating a lot those past few days. I've been, like, really getting myself healthy because we went on slop. And, yeah, I think that comp was just made for me, man. Like, I would have won that. I think I would have beaten anybody in the game at that competition specifically.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think anybody would have been even close to you on that, because you did stairs a lot.
Every day, yeah.
Every day. So, very Godfrey Manguiza design or friendly competition, yeah, I should say.
Exactly.
When did you guys have to make the decision to vote someone out of the jury? Was it after part two of the HOH, or was it when exactly was that? Because you three were all still in the game, right?
We made the decision to vote somebody out for jury after that was before the part two of the HOH competition. Okay. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so how long were you guys in that room deciding on who you wanted to vote out of that jury?
Oh, we were in there for about 3 hours, man.
Oh, wow.
It was a long time. We literally go in, and right away, it was like I was being hounded, man. Like, it was like these two hounds just going at me. Like, I saw a different side of those two girls that I had not seen before, you know? Sarah, who was supposed to have been my ally, closest ally at that point, literally just threw me under the bus, man. Sarah's like, see, Ashley, I told you, Coffee's a liar. He's not to be trusted. He's selfish. I can't believe he'd do this to us. And then, like, Ashley's just mad at me. Because, like, I suggested, like, obviously, I'm going to suggest for somebody to vote out of the jury. I'm like, we should do Zach. And she was upset because I knew for sure he wasn't voting for me, no matter what. So I'm like, he got to go. Like, you know, everyone else is a potential vote for me, but, like, he got to go. And then they were leaning towards, they're like, well, you got to get rid of Bruno, or you got to get rid of Kev. No, not Bruno. They were actually saying Bobby. And then after a while, we're like, okay, let's all pick two locked up votes that we know we have for sure. But then my point why I was upset, because I was telling them, like, you guys already have locked up votes. So for you to say, let's just pick our locked up votes, you've already showed that you have an advantage over me, because I don't have any locked up votes. I'm just speculating right now. I was like, Bruno could go either way. Who knows? He might just say he's going to go for Ashley. He was in the chop shop with her. He wasn't in the chop shop with me. And then at that point, they thought that I was just playing games, which I was, because I was trying to stall. And I figured, I'm like, how about if we go to the end and not decide anything? Maybe production would have to randomly choose who gets evicted, or maybe the fans would have to choose who got evicted. So that's what I was leaning towards, and I was really stalling in there and doing anything I can to just stall the decision. They were throwing up names. They were like, you know, hey, how about we get rid of okay, we'll get rid of Kevin then, if that's what you want. And I'm like, I don't know, man, should we? And I'm like, and then Ashley tells me, she's like, yeah, Kev actually might vote for me, but I'll give you this vote. I was like, wait a minute, so you're willing to give me a vote? That must mean you have even way more votes than I have, if you're willing to sacrifice your own locked-in vote just to shut me up. That must mean you really got this locked down, don't you? And then, like, you know, everybody, like, just, like, emotions were high, and I swear they had some type of gas in that room, man, causing everybody to go crazy. Because, yeah, like, we were going at it, man. You know, like, I was going at it with Sarah, because Sarah was really trying to play dumb at that point, going like, oh, I have no votes at all. Cindy and Britt won't vote for me. But like, Sarah, come on. You expect us to believe that? Yeah. And, like, yeah, I think at the point Ashley was actually buying it, so that was upsetting me. I'm like, no, Ashley, she has votes. Don't believe her. Yeah. She has Cindy's vote. Yeah. But, like, yeah, that's... And I think it was more frustrating for the girls, because they really knew who was going to vote for them. For me, it was not so clear in that, because the manner in which I had played the game, I had never been really close to somebody to the point where I knew for a fact they would vote for me, because my game had always been be the middle man, stay in the middle, don't commit to one side, always be the free agent. So when it came down to now, it's going to be beneficial if you had people who are committed to you, it was kind of tough for me to decipher who's going to vote for me and who's going to not, because I didn't know their mindset. I didn't know your mindset. I was actually counting you as a potential vote for me. I didn't want you to go out in there either.
Yeah.
Because they were like, you know, maybe JP's got to go. But I was like, man, I don't know. Because JP told me if I made Final Two, he'll vote for me. So it's not smart for me if I get rid of him, you know. And at the end, when it came down to it, it was like the two people we had Kev and we had you. And then it was like really like, you know, I had like fought because I was like, man, at least I want a girl in it, just in the running for the decision. You know, like, why is it the two guys? There's already more girls in the jury. Why are we getting rid of more guys? I'm like, what if the jury decides to vote based on, hey, Godfrey's a dude, man. He's one of the boys. Let's vote for him. Then I lost the vote, you know. The girls might be like, hey, we want to vote a girl. So, yeah, it was a tough one, man. But then it came down to seniority. And we're like, you know what? Maybe it will be the fairest thing if we pick the person who was who had been in the game the least. And then that's what it came down to, you know, which was not good strategically on me, because I would have preferred to stall and see what would happen if we could not come to a decision. But hey, man, I think Ashley was about to kick my ass, man. Like, hey, when you guys saw the finger, that was like literally, that was the softest thing she did that night, man. Like, yeah, I thought they were going to beat me up, man. I'm like, hey, I'm going to have to cave in, yo. JP it is. At least I get to leave out here.
Oh, my God.
And at the same time, you're not trying to piss anybody off in that room, man.
Right.
Because these two girls could possibly decide my fate if one of them won the final HOH. So I was trying to balance not upsetting them, but at the same time not letting them totally dictate who gets to be evicted out of the jury, you know. And I think they really got the better end of the deal in that.
Yeah, well, it worked out, I think, it was interesting. I think that you guys made the right decision. I certainly think that getting rid of me was the fairest thing, because I was out of the game the longest. And I've admitted at several occasions.
Big brother, man. Like, yeah. You're trying to do the smart thing, not the
fair
thing.
That is true. But, yeah. I mean, all three of you, I think, weren't sure where my head was at. So I understand where your rationale was with it. And also, too, I'm glad you guys made that decision, because certain people, if they got voted out, would have, like cried.
Yeah,
or
absolutely. You took it pretty well, yeah.
Yeah.
You actually were proud of that. I'm like, hey, this guy's going to put that on his resume.
Yeah.
Only man voted out of Big Brother.
Exactly, Godfrey. Yeah, I am proud of it. I think it's cool. And I was furthest removed from the game, so I didn't really know 100% what was going on. You know, the information that I had was based on, like, what everyone was giving me.
Absolutely.
I mean, certain people in the jury were trying to get me to vote one way, and I was like, no, I'm going to vote my own way and make my own decision. Mm-hmm. But At the same time, it was tough because I hadn't seen you guys in like a month. So it was hard for
me to
decide something. So ultimately, Godfrey, you win the final HOH. Huge win for you. You're going to the final two for sure. Really hard decision. You got to choose between Ashley and you got to choose between Sarah. Why ultimately settle on Ashley? I know you said in that interview with Spencer McRae that it was – or Ashley that you wanted to vote out. Because I know talking to Spencer McRae, you said it was a last-minute decision. You weren't sure until the very end. Was it mainly because you knew Ashley had votes locked up from that conversation you had with her in the voting out thing with the jury?
It has a lot to do with a lot of things. What it really came down to at the end of the day was who I thought was more well connected and who I thought whose game the jury would appreciate more. And like throughout the Big Brother, like throughout the competition, Ashley had more alliances than me and Sarah combined. She had been aligned with pretty much everybody in the house except for me and Sarah. And who knows, she might have been aligned to Sarah at one point. Like, here's the thing. And, like, Ashley, hey, man, she's a sweetheart. She literally broke it down. She was not shy at all to brag about this and tell us that, yeah, guys, you did not know what was going on. Because when it was, like, final three, she was kind of spilling everything out, telling us what was going on. Because it's final three, man. Like, what are you going to hide? At that point, everybody was just kind of being candid and saying, hey, this is who I worked with earlier on. It was just kind of being honest because we knew, hey, whoever's going to win the final HOH, like, their decision likely will not be based on this conversation, you know. They're going to do what's smart for them. So we were kind of all talking. And me, having not been aligned to anybody in the house, I wasn't saying, hey, I was with this guy, I was with that guy. But Ashley was even telling us she was in a total of 6 alliances, I believe. She was in the diaper. She was in the chop shop. She told me she was even in another alliance prior to that with Johnny and Kev that they kind of approached her. She was in one with Peely and had a final two deal with her. And she was in an alliance with you as well. Mm-hmm. And she said she was even in one with you and Zach and her. So when I was looking at it, I was like, man, at the end of the day, it's not going to matter if I outplayed Ashley strategically because you guys are always going to have a better insight of Ashley's game because you played alongside her. And it was much easier to appreciate somebody's game when you were playing together with them. And at the same time, there's more of a sense of loyalty, you know. You want to reward somebody who you were in it together with as opposed to somebody who you were not, who was trying to get you out, you know. Like, so that was my logic at the time. I was like, man, Ashley has played so closely to a lot of people that maybe to me and Sarah, her game might seem pretty soft and pretty, like, you know, non-strategic, just random. But who knows? Maybe for the people who she worked with, maybe it was Ashley calling the strategic moves, you know? Because I was thinking about this. I was like, maybe this whole time we thought Zach was controlling Ashley. It could have been Ashley telling Zach what to do. It could have been Ashley in the chop shop going like, hey, boys, this is what we're doing. So I was like, man, do I really want to take a risk as opposed to Sarah, who has burnt a lot of bridges? And even though she did work with you guys, I know she wasn't as close to you guys as was Ashley game-wise. So, yeah, that's what it came down to, man. I was like, it's all about perception. What's the jury's perception of Ashley's game, you know? Because the whole time my judgment had been clouded. I thought they were going to look at Ashley's game the same way I did. But coming out of the house with everything in hindsight, now I actually see that a lot of you guys did respect Ashley's game, and rightfully so, because she wasn't just sitting around doing nothing, you know. She was actually making some moves that I just didn't get to see, but you guys got to see it, and therefore would have been more likely to reward that.
Yeah, it's really interesting looking back on it, and I remember at the time, a lot of people were like, oh my God, like, I can't believe that Godfrey voted out Ashley and all this stuff to me, just like in public and friends and stuff like that. And that was, I figured that was where you were coming from, was that the idea that, yeah, Ashley has all these relationships, you know, for sure, these votes that she definitely has locked up. So you didn't want to go into that final two being down 4-0 right off the bat, because that's basically exactly what it would have been. Is you would have been,
it would have been 4-0.
It would have been 4-0 without the speeches even happening or anything. So You go into this final two. You're there with Sarah.
Exactly.
And it's tough. I mean, you don't really have much time to talk.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's anything you could have done differently, Godfrey, in that those few minutes to convince us otherwise? Because and if not, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you wish they would have done for the speeches? Like, what do you think would have been better for you to give you a chance to explain your game to the jury?
I definitely really wish the questioning had been much longer and more in depth, because I'm like, at the end of the day, like, this is Big Brother. We are deciding the person who's going to win, and then you're going to give them 30 seconds to plead their case. Like, come on, we played the game for 70 days. Like, you know, at least give us 5 minutes or something, you know. Like, I know the whole thing is taped, but at least give us a lot more time to articulate our game and also give the jury a better time to ask the questions. And to be like, you know, hey, how did you play it? How did you do it? Like, when you watch Survivor, man, like, they got a long time in that final tribal council. But, like, Big Brother, it's, like, literally 30 minutes. Like, 5 minutes of deciding who's going to win. I'm like, it's not like we're making – they give us more time to decide who we're going to evict. At least give us a lot of time to decide the winner, you know? So I definitely think that should have been done differently. But as far as would that have given me a significant edge to win, I think I could have possibly. There would have been a possibility, but I don't blame so much the process, because coming into the game, I knew it was going to be like this. It's not like this was a surprise to me, you know? It's not like they said, okay, Godfrey, we changed the rules now. Like, I knew the questioning was going to be like that, and I put the blame more so on myself because I should have prepared myself for that. And, like, it's more so my game that I should have changed as certain elements of my game to secure that victory at the end. Because I think I kind of left it up to chance. I kind of let it into the hands of the jury.
So
when there are little things I could have done to give me a more favorable advantage, you know.
What would you change about your game if you could do anything? Because you really played, like, pretty much almost a flawless game. You did a really great job. You followed your strategy to a T. You were adaptable. You rode the middle the entire way. And ultimately, you only got 2 votes. Why do you think that was?
Like, at the end of the day, I think, like, what I should have changed about my strategy would have been to build a lot more closer relationships and, I guess, make a couple alliances throughout the thing, you know, because I kind of played a one-man game. And at the end of the day, like, Big Brother is not a one-person game. You're still going to need the votes towards the end. So I think I should have definitely kind of made more deals and not played too much of the middleman.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So let's say hypothetically they call you and they say in a couple years and they say, hey, Godfrey, you want to come back for Big Brother Canada All-Stars? What do you say to that phone call?
Well, I say, hell yeah, man, I'm coming back.
All right, man. Good to know, because yeah. I think people will be excited to hear that.
Yeah, man. You'll probably see, like, the same Godfather, but, like, I'll switch it up a little bit.
A little bit.
I'd do a lot more damage early on just to earn that respect, so that for the people who might not appreciate the low-key, subtle game, they can be like, oh, all right, I guess he won comps. Because, you know, nowadays you got to win something. I guess the game has changed. So, like, that's what I do, you know. Like, I'd go a little more aggressive earlier on and still try to balance it out, you know.
All right. Interesting. Well, I think it's going to be exciting to watch you from my couch that day that it does happen, Godfrey. Because
who knows, man? We might be in there together, bro. Brothers reunited.
That would be fun. I would really enjoy that. I don't think I will. I don't even know if I would want to go back. But regardless, seeing you play again, which I'm sure will happen at some point, is going to be very fun for a lot of people. So I'm excited for that day, Godfrey. Last question from me. Next week on my show, we're doing, I won't be there, but we're doing a ranking show of the best Big Brother Canada players of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you rank yourself amongst all of the players in Canada that I've ever played?
Man, since I'm a modest guy, I think I'd rank myself in the top 3. Top 2, maybe. Just to be fair.
I don't know, man.
Like, I'm just saying, you know, based on my performance, you know, like, I think I would, man. I think I would. I think I'd rate myself really up there with the greats, you know.
Yeah.
Or the greats are up there with me. One of the two.
Yeah, I think you can put it either way. I think you played a great game, and I'm personally not submitting any rankings because I'm biased because I know you and I know a lot of other people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right? But
Big Brother Canada, by the way, has had like a lot of phenomenal players. So it's a really tough call, you know, because the thing people don't understand is that Big Brother, it's no different than any other sport, you know, kind of like boxing or MMA. Just because you beat somebody on one fight, all that means is you are the better man that night. It doesn't make you the better fighter. You know, you will fight him again, and if you beat him again, you are the better man that night. But you could fight time and lose. Big Brother is no different, you know. You can win this season, and you could come back the next season, and you might be the second person out, you know. So I was the better man on my season, and in the rankings, like, it all depends, man. It all depends. You can never trust the rankings too much.
All right, well, I'm excited to see where you rank. A bunch of my good pals are going to be ranking you, Godfrey, so it should be fun to see where they slot you in. But I think, yeah, you'll probably be up there. You'd be up there for me, certainly. I think you did a great job.
Thanks.
And I think that you you know, I didn't see it when I was in there because I wasn't working with you, but watching the show, it really opened my eyes, and hearing you talk about the game, I think it's really cool. And just talking to you today, I picked up on a lot of stuff that you did, and it's just really interesting in hearing about all of the different things that you did while you played that game. And I just want to, you know, give yourself a pat on the back, man. You did a great job.
Thanks,
and
brother.
I'm excited to see what the Godfather has in store for Big Brother Canada All-Stars, if it ever is to happen.
Oh, absolutely, man. I'll have a couple of tricks up my sleeve, man.
All right, Godfrey. You know, I think we'll save the we ran out of time today, but maybe if you're open to it, at another day we can do the life advice questions. Would you be open?
Oh,
to
absolutely, man. No problem at all.
Okay. So we'll save that podcast for another day. Maybe after Big Brother Canada 4 or somewhere along the way.
No, we got to do it sooner, man. What you talking about?
You want to do it sooner?
Waiting for advice, man.
Okay. Well, then maybe Godfrey, you want to
come
back?
Somebody's getting married, you know. They need some advice ASAP.
Okay, Godfrey, maybe in a couple weeks before the season
absolutely,
starts.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. ASAP, man. We got to do that real quick.
Okay. So we'll do a life advice podcast. Won't be as long as this one, but it'll be fun. I'm excited for that. So guys, stay tuned for that. Should be a very fun one. If you want to make sure you don't miss out on that, go to robiswebsite.com/happyhour, and that way you won't miss any episode of the podcast. Godfrey, before I let you go, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your wisdom with the audience. I think you were so generous with your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely not, man. It's like old times, man. I could talk to you for hours, bro. Like, we talked for hours in the house, man, so it never gets old.
No, it never does, man. I'm with you. The feeling is mutual. I love chatting with you. You always make me laugh, and we always have good talks. So let's do this again soon. It's going to be good. Anything you want to plug before you get out of here?
Absolutely. Oh, like pretty much just like, you know, Reality Rally. People got to make sure you donate. A couple of my friends from the cast are all doing it, you know. So just people, you know, donate for that. Give what you can. And can't wait for Big Brother Canada Season 4, man.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good, Godfrey.
But also, I'll be handing out tickets to my graduation, man, to one lucky fan. So, yeah.
Whoa!
That too.
All right, there you go. Look at that. Breaking news from Godfrey Manguiza, the lady pleaser. You might be going to his graduation, just if you're lucky. So we'll see. Godfrey, looking forward to seeing you on the sideshow and talking to you soon. Should be great.
Guys, absolutely.
Follow Godfrey on Twitter. He is at the lady pleaser with a Z or a Z if you're in the United States. And then to Instagram, you're Mr. Godfather, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so go follow Godfrey if you're not already. Definitely tweet him and let him know what you thought about this podcast. Godfrey, we need a hashtag to talk about to let people know to what to tweet at us if they made it all the way to the end of this podcast, because it was a really long one. So what do we want to go with?
Oh, hashtag launched, man.
Hashtag launched.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if you made it to the end of this, it's the same as getting launched.
All right. So we're going to go. You heard it from the Messiah, the Lord. He's telling you. It's hashtag launched. So definitely tweet Godfrey, tweet myself, and Matt Jordan Parhar. Let us know what you thought about this episode of the Happy Hour. And if you have a life advice question that you didn't get in time, now's your chance to send them to us. You can email them to me. My email is jparharbbcan@gmail.com. Make sure you get those in. And Godfrey and I will do a podcast again, hopefully in a couple weeks here, and we'll talk about all that. All right, guys. For Godfrey Manguiza, I'm Jordan Parhar. Hashtag launched. We'll talk
launch.
To you soon. Take care. Peace out. Parhar without R-H-A-P. Reality TV, we're happy hour. Reality TV, we're happy hour.
What up, ladies? Yeah.
Yeah!
When I say hell, yo say yeah. Hell yeah!
Yeah.
Hey. I sweep the competition up. You can call me the broom.
Whoa.
I'm the bride and the groom.
Hey.
Mm-mm-mm. Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
Now let's get going.
Woo.
I'm about to get some shout outs.
Hey.
That's my boy Bobby. Making slop is his hobby.
Ooh.
He got his ass waxed. They did it in the lobby.
Yeah.
Now we got pimples.
Oh.
It looks like Ashley's dimples.
Oh.
And hey, my girl Britt.
Hey.
My bad, I saw your nipples.
Oh.
Now let's go. Whoa, bring that beat back, man. I got one more verse in here. What the hell, what kind of show is this, man?
Woo!
Yo, Sarah, you hotter than the Sahara. I know you love Scotty, but girl, you still a hottie. But you gotta wash that hair. It smells worse than a potty. You kiss me at the hot tub. Girl, them lips taste sour. Maybe you should take a shower for at least about an hour. I do this every day. I'm coming from the south. Open all day. Just like Willow's mouth. But you know I love Willow. Take a nap on my pillow. And let's see how far we go. Proper!
Congratulations, Godfrey. Well done, sir. Well done.
We're not worthy.
Get it.